Well, this is the Decoration Day weekend, and I sincerely hope that you take it easy on the highway. No use rushing. Best that can happen is that you'll get there 5 or 10 minutes earlier than what you thought, and so what's the reason to get there that early? Just take it easy. There's no doubt that we'll be talking to a number of people that possibly have never heard the party line before. And I sincerely hope that after you hear it, that you don't say, I'm glad that I never heard it before. You know, we talk with a lot of people. We talk with people who claim that they've been to the moon. You don't believe that, huh? So we have. We talked to a man that, it was just about a year and 2 weeks ago tonight that I met a fella out in California. May 11th and May 12th of last year, about 54 weeks ago, I was out at the Giant Rock Airport, the 4th Annual Interplanetary Spacecraft Convention. The reason I'm mentioning this is we may have... See, normally we've got 8 listeners. Decoration Day weekend, we possibly have... Or we may have, you know, really gone wild tonight. We may have 11. Could be 14, I don't know. But, I met a man out there at this interplanetary spacecraft convention, a man about 60 years of age by the name of Buck Nelson. And Buck is a farmer from Missouri. And he claims that he went to the moon, Venus, and Mars one weekend, 4th of July weekend. And when he came back to this planet, the Earth, the Venusians... requested Buck to take care of their Venusian dog for 4 or 5 days. They were going to leave it on this planet. I guess they were going to go to some other planets, you know. And they left this 385-pound dog with Buck Nelson. I can just see some guy on the highway right now, you know. He possibly stopped in to one of the diners on the way, and in this diner, they possibly had, you know, over in the corner, they had a little small bar, and he figured, you know, I've had a real tough week and taking the family out, and I might have one. And so he lifted one, and he's listening to this. He said, can this be, is this possible? A fellow on the air is talking about a 385-pound dog. This is the last drink you'll have, neighbor. You stick to coffee if you're going to drive. But I'm giving you a square count. This man told me about a 385-pound dog, and well, we've talked to a lot of people who have had unusual stories, and we've got a lad with us tonight. He's got a story to tell us, too. Bob Ewing, E-W-I-N-G, from Edgewater, Florida, representing the planet Venus. You stick with us, and... you know, don't use the heavy foot. No heavy foot on the gas tonight. Just take it easy. Say, before we talk with our guests, let me just take a moment to take care of a little piece of business. E-W-I-N-G of Edgewater, Florida. Bob, we had the opportunity of talking, I guess, about 4 or 5 months ago when we were out in Carteret, New Jersey, which is the transmitter of WOR, and at that time I think you had a lady who you were kind enough to bring to these microphones. She was a trance medium. Now, I happen to have in front of me an envelope, and on this envelope, on the upper left-hand corner of the envelope, as a return address, first of all, it says Bob Ewing, E-W-I-N-G, representing the planet Venus, Edgewater, Florida. Bob, what do you mean by that, representing the planet Venus?
Well, John, after 365 days of our work, Miss Brady and I are given to understand by the Venusians that we represent them. It's the little bulletin that I put out, the new era is there. And we are given instructions and guidance whenever we are lecturing, touring, and we know in advance what to do. We are unpaid employees of the planet Venus, as we see it.
Well, now, You just made the statement, Bob, that you know that you are representing the planet Venus. You know that the publication that you are printing out of Edgewater, Florida, you just made the statement that you know that this is... How did you say that again? This is from the planet Venus?
From the satellite of the planet Venus. We never talked to Venus direct.
From the satellite? You seem to be a little confused too, Ellery.
Yes, Bob Ewing. Shall I address you as Mr. Ambassador, do I understand? Is that correct?
There's no titles involved with the Venusians ever.
Oh, well, how shall I address you? What do you prefer?
Just plain Bob Ewing. That's very
Bob
well.
Ewing. Well, Bob Ewing, the satellite of the planet Venus throws me off my bearings for a while. I wish you would elaborate. I have never found any references to a satellite going around the planet Venus.
Well, Mr. Lerner, in our work, we are told that the Venusians have planets orbiting, satellites orbiting Earth. We know that there are 10 in number. There is a satellite.
You are referring to Venusian satellites orbiting the Earth?
Artificially made satellites, yes.
Orbiting the Earth that comes from Venus?
Yes.
I see. Now I follow you.
And satellite 2 is the satellite most concerned with New York. Geographically, it is closest to New York and handles the, let us call it the monitoring. Such as the Long John Show every night, probably, here in New York.
I see. And does this particular satellite stay over New York continuously? Is it sort of located permanently over New York and it rotates around the planet as we turn?
Yes, that is correct. Satellite 2 will stay with you. Satellite 5 is our home satellite. We are a part of the unit of Satellite 5. And it's with that satellite alone that we work.
When you say we, are you referring to Ms.
Bob
Brady.
Ewing and Miss Brady?
Yes.
And there have been others associated with us that are helping me work along.
Supposing I decided to become associated with you, Bob, would you automatically feel that I was a part of Satellite 5?
Not automatically, John. It would come during a personal interview with the Venusians. In other words, if Miss Brady were here and we were speaking with the Venusians, they would make up whatever decision there is to be made in the case of Longer.
Well, now, how do you speak to Venusians? Or do you go to that planet?
Why, John, the entire contact with little quotation marks on either side is made by Miss Brady, a regular trance medium who has had the gift of mediumship, psychic ability, since birth, developing it in her teens. And while in a complete trance, her vocal cords are operated by someone, let us say. Quotation marks again.
I'm glad you said that, someone. In other words, my question, I'm sorry to interrupt you, Bob, but how do you know that that someone is the planet Venus? And incidentally, is the planet Venus a person?
No, decidedly not. It's another world, such as our own planet, with lakes, with mountains, with valleys, with an atmosphere, cities, a ruling council, people, schools, all of the rest.
Well, does the president of the planet Venus talk to this trance medium, Miss Brady, or who actually contacts him?
You were right the first time. Hamamatsu has the... It isn't a title, it's a descriptive word. The word leader of the Venusian people, in that he is senior member of the ruling council at this moment. With Hamamatsu we speak, yes. Hamamatsu?
Is this the name of the language you speak, yes?
No. But Hamamatsu has spoken through Miss Brady most recently, and the latest thing that we have done of some consequence, perhaps, is a meeting at Cocos, Florida, where there were 350 guided missile people. Hamamatsu, during the course of the evening, did speak through Miss Brady,
However, so did two other people, Humboldt and Johann, both pilots of Venusian Ventlers, as they call them, flying saucers, as we call them, UFOs, as the Air Force calls them.
Ventlers. Now, Ventler is synonymous with UFOs or flying saucers.
It is the craft flown by Venusians, yes. Martians, Jupiterians,
would be a different, no. Fine. Now, Hamamatsu, is this the name of an individual or is this a title?
It is his name.
This is his name. Like my name is Long John, you're Bob Ewing. His name is Hamamatsu. Have you ever seen Hamamatsu?
No, I have not.
Has Miss Brady ever seen Hamamatsu?
She has never spoken of it, though. If we think of her astral flight, she may have seen various parts of the Venusian countryside and things like that, but she has never spoken of seeing Hamamatsu.
When you say astral flight, are you implying that Miss Brady astrally projects her body to the planet Venus?
Not necessarily to the planet Venus, but to various places on this Earth and to various planes of existence, though I have no specific record of it having been the planet Venus. In a flying saucer, she has projected herself as recently as I think it was about 2 months ago.
When you say in a flying saucer, you mean that she gets on this Ventla as Miss Brady and then astrally projects her body from the flying saucer to another location?
No, she's sitting in class in Daytona Beach, Florida, during our Wednesday night master's class, as we call it. Lasting from about 8 o'clock until about 9:30, she is in trance. During that time, while the various personalities speak through her, she has astral flight.
She isn't there?
Physically, she is there.
The astral body is
not present? The astral body is not present, no, sir.
And Hamamatsu, Hama, and Yoma use her body.
They, the Venusians and many others, use their vocal cords, yes.
There are others besides Hama, Yoma, and Hamamatsu?
Yes, there are very many. You're speaking of Johann and Hamble were the two names you have switched to.
How did I ever miss that list? What is it?
Johann.
Johann, I'm sorry.
And Hamble. Johann happens to be in charge of flight operations, Satellite 5. All flights from Satellite 5.
Ellery Lanier.
Mr. Bob Ewing, Satellite 5, you say, is, in a sense, anchored over New York City. I would like to know, is it at any time possible to have the visual sightings, even in the, to the slightest degree, of Satellite 5 over New York? Can we hope for such a visual sighting?
Well, your question, Ellery, has two parts there. Number one, it is Satellite 2 that I spoke of as being over New York. And the thing is this, that it was October 21st that Miss Brady and I appeared on the Long John Show. That was a Monday night, as he recalls. Saturday night previously, we stood on the corner, Miss Brady and I, of 7th Avenue and Bleecker Street. And we very definitely and positively saw a green fireball fired from Upper Manhattan to the south.
Yes.
And it is perfectly possible that visual representation of these things will be seen and are seen continually in the New York area.
These are things connected with Satellite 5.
Yes, flights from there.
That is not Satellite 5 itself.
No, that is 10,000 miles out.
10,000 miles, you say?
Yes.
And what is the size? Do you know anything, have you any information as to the dimensions of Satellite 5?
Yes, roughly, not the dimensional things themselves, but it appears to take the form of the spokes of a wheel, such as the little model that can be obtained in model stores and books. A hub with spokes radiating from it. The center portion is the living quarters for the crew, and the outer rim contains the technical apparatus, and dimensionally, we do not have that.
I've never seen this model. What model are you...
I have one. I have built one. I have it in my home.
Well, now, if you say you built one, that's different. But in other words, are you saying that these are available in model shops?
Yes, they're available in our model shops.
You can mention the name of these. I've never heard of it.
It's a Disney production. It's a Walt Disney, yes. It's very cleverly built. It has radiating spokes of nylon thread that you painstakingly weave around and turn
yourself around. This is KD. This is a knockdown.
It's a knockdown frame.
And you build it.
Yeah.
You build it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I've never heard of it.
It's very striking. Makes a good coffee table piece. Has a base. It's about 98 cents.
Let's take a moment. There's so many things we want to talk about. I know that Ellery Lanier has a number of questions, and I know that I have. You tossed in something a couple of minutes ago, Bob Ewing. You mentioned about a class in Daytona Beach, Florida. Now, I've never been in Florida. What is the relationship of Daytona Beach, Florida, to Edgewater, Florida? What is the distance between these two communities?
It's about 20 miles, with the city of New Smyrna Beach in between.
Mm-hmm. Now, at Daytona Beach, Florida, you have mentioned to us that there are classes there. Are you teaching something, or does Miss Brady teach something?
The theory, John, is this, that we all have the five senses, that with proper reflection and development of the senses, we can evolve. Mediumship is not necessarily a gift. Mediumship and psychic ability is within most everyone. I think some figures say 9 out of 10 people.
When you say some figures, where did you get these figures?
Various books that have been written on the subject of mediumship, mm-hmm. and evolvement, as it is most always called. So you have the situation where people desirous of acquiring mediumship would like to sit with a medium and to learn from the master teachers. The master teachers are those of other realms, other planes of existence, who are associated with those people here on Earth and will assist their education, let us say. So in Miss Brady's class on Wednesday evening, we have many mediums sitting.
Many mediums?
Many. I would hazard the guess that mediumship, in one form or another, clairvoyance or clairaudience, is perhaps attained by 8 out of 12 people sitting there.
I wonder if you could tell us the difference between those two terms, clairaudience and clairvoyance.
Clairaudience is to hear clearly by derivation. Clairvoyance is to see clearly by derivation. So, we think of clairvoyance as someone who is able to see manifestations from another dimension, quite popularly, people think of the next dimension that we're worrying about is the one that Einstein has brought up, the fourth dimension. It has come to be known as the spirit world, or the astral world. It has many names. No, not by Mr. Einstein.
He didn't make that statement.
No, I think you recall a quotation. Someone said, aren't you interested in knowing a people of other worlds or something? And he says, I know there's something in the sky, the UFOs, but I'm not anxious to know more about it. It's a quotation from the Einstein.
Hello? I really want to continue with this concept of being able to see the satellite 5. I was wondering whether it is at a constant height over New York City, or does it ever descend somewhat so that we may conceivably have a viewing of it directly from, say, Times Square, looking up into the sky?
No, I have no exact and positive information on that. I can certainly tell you this, that our satellite number 5, which is vaguely somewhere in our direction, I have, of course, never observed, and they have never said that it either raises or lowers or travels vertically or horizontally in any direction.
When you say our satellite number 5, do you feel that you're a Venusian, that this is something that belongs to you, or do you feel that you're an Earth person?
I'm just one of the help. I'm an Earth person.
And, in other words, then, should I also refer to Satellite 5 as our satellite?
Can I include myself in that group as an Earth person?
John, you haven't joined our unit yet.
Well, then, in other words, as an Earth person, you're not making that statement.
Our satellite fire. No, I'm...
As a representative of Venus.
I'm quoting directly. John, when I give you a direct answer, I have about 100 tapes that I can quote from. And I'm quoting from Plymouth Rowley, a woman teacher of Venus, who has concluded the tape one day saying, "You are part of my group, of Satellite 5, which is my station, and which is Johann's station, and you are one of the people of Satellite 5. So the relationship is that of representative, let us say again."
Bob, I want to mention at this point, I have observed the planet Venus through a what I would call a medium power telescope, and I've had the great pleasure of observing it in the crescent moon form, which is quite a beautiful sight. And I understand, I have looked at some photographs taken through extremely high power telescopes of the planet Venus, using various wavelengths of light other than the regular visible wavelengths, in which differences of surface conformations like mountains and the varying clouds over the surface of the planet have been observed. This is quite exciting to me. However, most of the theories that I have read, I'm not talking of your particular school of thought, claim that the planet Venus is probably covered with a surface of water, a continuous ocean, without any land surface at all. Do you have any information as to the actual appearance of the surface? Has that been transmitted?
Yes, it was transmitted quite publicly. February the 7th, in the Rockledge High School in Cocoa, Florida, before the panel of eight men, the master of ceremonies was the mayor of the city. It was the high school auditorium, Miss Brady sitting on the left of the auditorium, the panel being about 40 feet away. And there was present the meteorologist, whom we are told is in charge of the final estimation of the weather for the Vanguard and Atlas firings at Cape Canaveral. So he led into this discussion asking a very factual question about the coverage, the atmosphere content, the surface, and things like that. And he was given very direct answers by Hamble and by Johann.
What happened to Hamamatra? He didn't get in on this?
Hamamatra has, when you hear him, the dignity of a John Foster Dulles or a President Eisenhower speaking.
Is he the Dulles of Venus?
He is. This is his mission to Earth, and when he comes, it is a fairly rare occasion, and not too frequent. But the question of the atmosphere and the surface was battered back and forth between the Venusians and the scientific panel there. I might add that a man of authority, we are told, of course, when a man is of authority, somebody tells you he's of authority, of the atmospirings was one of the members of the panel, as were two electronic heads of the manufacturer's representatives there at the Cape Canaveral missile base. So they led into the question as to the content, the carbon dioxide and the oxygen content. The Venusians claiming that intense heat and intense cold were impossible to have on Venus, but it had a regular temperature, such as we do, but with support life, owing to the fact that the atmosphere that generally covers Venus is making an envelope, a blanket, about it. They spoke of the mountains, the valleys, and the flat places.
Bob, I am very much puzzled. I will say, assuming that...
You don't know how much puzzled you're going to be by the time 4 o'clock comes.
I know from what you say and what astronomers say and what I have observed myself through the telescope that the planet Venus seems to have a very thick cloud covering. And assuming let us suppose that this planet, our Earth that we live on, had that type of covering, we never would see the stars. all we would see would be a great big mass of cottony, billowing clouds in the sky, and we would have absolutely no notion that the stars existed or that there was a sun. We might, in fact, not know that there was a universe outside of our clouds. What puzzles me and what I would like to ask you is whether any of the persons who are personages of the planet Venus who have been transmitting to your people have indicated whether it is possible for the inhabitants of the planet Venus to see the stars or to see our Earth, to see us in effect.
That was mentioned one night, yes. And they said, of course, they have quite a different view of the universe than we have from our Earth. But how about the fellow that went up in a balloon and found everything was real black out there?
You're talking about our man here on Earth.
Our Air Force man.
Well, as I recall, he did see the stars. Did he not? As I recall, that I think he did see the stars, but the sky was black. It's black and blue.
Mm-hmm.
However, he did see the stars. But apparently the Venusians do know that the stars exist. They are not fooled by this cloud, this continuous cloud. Or do you say that the cloud breaks? Do they see through the cloud?
Yes, I believe I can make that assumption, because they do speak of the view that they have from Venus. And as to mentioning stars as to whether they exist or not, they not only know they exist, but they visit them.
Okay.
Gentlemen, let me interrupt for just a moment to remind our listeners that this is WOR Radio, your station in New York. My name is Long John. We call this the Party Line.
Bob, I want to ask you about the planet Venus. In terms of the traditional notion of Venus as being the goddess of beauty, and do you have any information as to whether the women on Venus, assuming that there are women on Venus, I don't know, it may be a planet inhabited only by men, I don't know, I am asking you, does your information tell anything about what kind of women there are on the planet Venus?
Oh, yes. You have two questions there. One, are there women on Venus, and are they pretty? And I believe there was a first portion to that, too, wasn't there? We have the woman, Plymouth Raleigh, who has been coming to Miss Brady for many, many years. She's a Venusian master teacher. There is no frivolity, really, in the way they speak to us. In other words, she's a teacher of philosophy. So when the question was brought up one evening, are all of the women beautiful or pretty or some such word as that, she said many of us are attractive, yes, and just like yourself, because the physical body that they have is the same as ours.
And you mean a Venusian woman might be of the same average height as an average Earth woman?
Yes, and we have an answer there very apt. Miss Brady, I haven't her exact height, but I think as John remembers, about 5'11", wouldn't you say, John?
Yes, I would agree with you. Yes.
And Cimitrolli has told us that by natural law, some of these things, if we wonder why they work that way, that there are natural laws governing things, she has roughly the same physical makeup as does her instrument, as they call Miss Brady. So, but as the future rolls around,
that is very interesting.
The two women will one day, in the scheme of things, appear together on the platform, and their work will be done simultaneously, the two women almost being replicas of each other.
This is almost a sense resonance, vibrations.
Let me ask you this question, Bob Ewing. Why is it necessary for the people on this planet, the planet Earth, to receive these philosophical messages from Venusi? Don't we have enough philosophy on this planet without going away from it to try to get additional philosophy?
John, where do we find good philosophy these days, my friend?
Well, I know nothing about the Venusian philosophy, but I don't think we're in dire need of that. I think there's many other things we need. If these people have all of this intelligence, which evidently is considered by you to be superior to our intelligence, and if they like it, and evidently they do, and when I say
like, I imagine that they are, well, first of all, let me ask the question. Why should I assume anything? Would you say that they prefer the American to other nationalities?
No, John.
I'm talking now about the Venusians, the possibility of their preference.
No, sir. They have many, many times stressed the fact that they must contact Earth as a whole, favoring no country over the other, including our so-called enemies, in quotation marks.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as to philosophy...
Why do you put that word in quotation marks?
Well, who's your friend today, sometimes your enemy tomorrow. I recall that we fought the Japanese, and the Chinese were on our side at that time, I believe, and I think the situation's reversed a little now. The Russians were together with us in World War II. According to the headlines each morning, they're our enemies. It leaves the man a little bewildered, but one of the...
Well, aren't you interested in today?
Yeah.
In other words, if you and I are friendly today, this is what we're living at this particular time. If something occurs later in the morning or tomorrow or next month that we find we just don't hit it off anymore, and I'll employ the same word that you use, if we become enemies, in other words, we're not planning on becoming enemies. We're friendly today, and it's quite possible that we may become enemies, and maybe in 2 years from now we may be friends again. But during the time that there's an animosity that exists between two people, it exists, and that's it. So the Venusians, if they find that we feel that the Russians are enemies of America today, well, that's the situation today. Now, are they going to give us information how to protect ourselves, how to be able to build satellites that we can launch instead of having them fail each time, or are they going to give us philosophy? Very frankly, I don't need any more philosophy, and I don't think we need too much of that.
Well, John, I'm going to take issue with you and perhaps almost start with...
become my enemy. Huh?
Oh, yes,
go
right
ahead.
Here now. And perhaps to begin, though, by begging your pardon, that when I say our so-called enemies, I'm speaking from the Venusian side of the tape recorder. They refer to them as roughly that quotation marks around the word enemies, understanding as they do our situation. So it isn't their designation whatsoever as their being our enemy. Now, this business about giving us advance information or select information, no. The closest they have come to answering your questions was in Miami in December, before, I think, about 200 people. They were asked this question specifically: in the event of war, would they favor one side over the other? Hamamatsu gave the answer, saying that if war is to be brought about by the Russians in a sudden attack or something like that, that they will at that time fly by with a tremendous flyover, which will dissuade the Russians from doing anything at all.
Tremendous what was that, Bob?
A flyover, a flyby, in other words.
What does this mean?
Let us say that it would describe what happens in Moscow every May Day. The tremendous armada of
you
planes.
You mean this would be a show of force,
yes.
A show of power, a demonstration of power?
Yes.
And do they describe what this would be? Would this be a flight of, for example, thousands and thousands of flying saucers going across the area of Asia?
I wouldn't go into the thousand number. I would go into the hundreds, yes. That from every satellite station, whatever craft they were called upon to furnish, they would, and fly by Russia.
As I gather, I understand there are only five satellite stations, or did
yes.
I? There are ten.
There are ten, I think.
Okay. I wanted to ask you, in your reception of information from the Venusians, what language do they telepath or send their telepathic messages in?
They speak English, just as sometimes I think of them as our own Voice of America, broadcasting in the languages of those countries whom we wish to contact, the same situation.
Many times we have asked for samples of their language, or without our asking, they have gone into their own language, so that my tapes have many, many samples of Venusian.
I gather that this process of transmission doesn't involve you with the FCC in any sense at all. You don't use any wavelengths that correspond to our standard wavelengths which require legal arrangements.
No, they haven't gotten around to us yet. They probably will. They'll put a tax on it when they do.
Well, do you think the Venusians would be in a position to pay a tax?
No, I haven't seen any money change hands yet, Ellie. Have you ever seen the Venusians? No, I have not. Only Miss Brady. Miss Brady has not, to the best of my knowledge. However, we do have a member of the class who feels that she saw two Venusian boys. And it was confirmed on tape that two Venusian boys were, at that approximate time, that was approximately August of 1957, last year, that they were in the vicinity of Daytona Beach, having completed a mission and having traveled over most of the Earth. They have gone home to make the report.
What did they look like? Did anybody describe them?
She saw them in a restaurant. She was attracted by their hands. Fine, long, thin, tapering, a darkish complexion on the olive drab, and very, with a woman describing it, beautiful eyes. They seemed, in other words, sensitive or aesthetic.
These were young boys?
They were, I don't think the girl, I've spoken with the girl, by the way, and I don't think she got into their ages. Perhaps, early 30s or late 20s.
Bob, what about the age span of the Venusians? Is their age span similar to ours? Do they live as long as we do, or longer, or less?
A great deal longer, but there's always the problem of calculating the time difference, because in reference to time, of course, we have been told there is no such thing as time, nor is there such a thing as space. However, we govern ourselves by time, and they always translate. And many, many phrases, when necessary, they use the word in a matter of weeks, as you count time, or in a question of hours, as you reckon time. So, in their lifespan, Cimitrolli, for example, is 250 years old. That we know.
Is this considered middle-aged or elderly?
Their span, I believe, runs from somewhere to 350 to 400 years.
In terms of our years, not in terms of the Venusian year.
No, that's right. I believe they're calculating for us. I think it's
In other words, so that we would understand it. In other words, we won't misunderstand them in that way.
That's right. And they pointed out that physically, of course, they don't look their age.
I am curious about the length of time that it takes them to reach maturity. Do you have information about
that? Absolutely. They are matured at a very much earlier age, as they tell us. There is not the necessity for being born and going through the usual childhood that we have. They grow up quite rapidly, being highly developed people who become aware of things that they have to know. In other words, their education and their maturing speed.
I want to ask you something else about the planet Venus. Now, you understand, Bob, that I have absolutely no position as to the validity or truth of any of these things that you are saying. But for the sake of understanding, I will assume that what you are saying is so, in order to get a true picture and then form a judgment later on. When the planet Venus, in its circus round the sun, comes close to the Earth, is this the time that more contacts are made, or is it a question of their relevance as to the relative position in the solar system of the Earth and the planet Venus? Is there any connection there?
There have never been, no. And the proximity feature and so forth has never been discussed. It seems to be of no consequence at all in our work. We have nothing on that at all.
So how do this group of 10 satellites, do they come to us directly? Do they just fly straight from Venus to the Earth? Or are they transported through some other means?
Both are true. There are large Bentleys. I was quite surprised because somewhere I have a tape that said that they have approximately, I think it's 30 or 40 of the large Ventlers, each large Ventler carrying approximately 12 small ones.
I think we should mention again for some of the listeners that they just tuned in that the word Ventler is a Venusian word that is used to describe a flying saucer or UFO. Is that correct?
Yes, that's the term for them, John. And the large ones bring smaller ones to Satellite 5. However, many of them can make the trip under their own power. As a matter of fact, if we continue this part of it, it becomes very interesting because we have some excellent tapes where the pilots more or less break down and say, you should see the trouble we have with the old ones.
Bob,
In English. And then they discuss the maintenance. Someone asked them one night, how many trips can you make from Venus?
Bob, are these tapes available?
Oh, yes. Yes, they were made available to me.
Mm-hmm.
I had them out in Carteret, New Jersey, just about a year ago. It was last October, to be exact.
Let me take just a moment to take care of a little piece of business, and then we'll be back with our guests of the morning.
Yeah, wouldn't miss myself out of the road. However, as you know, my job is to remove all factual material. I delete the facts, that is a function of the fact editor. We're just smothered with facts nowadays, and it's a very welcome experience to be relieved of facts. I wanted to swing into the question of asking Bob about time and whether time...
I wonder if we can hold it.
We'll hold it, yes.
But just well, I'll tell you why, Ellery.
Yes.
It seems to me, I may be wrong, but it seems to me that Bob sort of worked his way out of answering a question before. And Bob, when I ask you a question, if you'd rather not comment on it, fine, you know, just no comment, and we're out of business on that one. Let me rephrase this question again. I asked you the question about 15 or 20 minutes ago. I said to you, Bob, why do we need so much philosophy? Why do we have to have Venusians coming to this planet or sending the message telepathically through a transmedium? I don't understand the reason, the need for this.
Well, John, you just got through with the news report. And the headlines tonight speak about De Gaulle, Algeria, and various things. The Dutch are having trouble in Indonesia, so forth. It made me think the other day, and I got to thinking this way, trying to arrive at a question for myself. You know, I'm harder on myself than even you are. And I said, well, on Plymouth Rock, when the pilgrims came in, all they had trouble with was the Indians and the need for growing corn and so forth. So with a blunderbuss and so forth, they went after the Indians. And then they had minor troubles. But here today, regardless of where we live in any community on the face of the United States, we have policemen on each corner. Then we have the sheriff's cars driving down the street.
We have what?
A policeman standing on the corner.
On each corner?
Well, in some communities, it's every other corner.
Continue.
And you have the sheriff's cars.
That way. They don't have it in New York that way.
I live in Florida, but I can get WOR very nicely every night of the week in Florida, and I hear some pretty terrible things.
About New York?
Oh, yes. You have a delinquency problem here that no one seems to be able to live.
And you don't have this in Florida?
We have our problem, and...
But you don't have this on the planet Venus. Is that what you're
saying? On the planet Venus, they don't have it yet.
Did you say yes?
Yes.
Yes. In other words, what you're trying to say is that if we follow the ideals, what is the name of this person who brings these messages to Miss Brady?
Well, we have quite a... There's probably about
one in particular.
I'm a monster?
No,
a
Macrawley? Woman.
A Macrawley.
In other words, you feel that we'd be able to lift the juvenile delinquency problem?
Oh, very definitely. Very definitely. You didn't let me go far enough, though, because I had I had the sheriff's cars coming down our highways all over. Then you have the state police. And then you start in with the Army, the Navy, the Coast Guard, the Marines,
And we're not at war with anybody. And we have a guided missile program. We have our airplanes in the air all the time and so forth. And it doesn't look like progress now since the Pilgrims, does it?
Too well.
Don't you think we need a philosophy to get back to some of the ideals?
Do you want me to answer that question? Or you just start?
I think you better answer.
If you'd like my answer to that question, I think you said, do we need a new philosophy?
Yes.
I think right now what we need is the clinicians can help us. I'd like to have them tell us how we can get one of these satellites up so they can go into orbit.
Well,
I think you can do this with philosophy. Maybe you can. Maybe I don't know what the word means.
There's a very simple thing that they would tell you, and that is that it is much easier to work with nature than against nature.
And you think that these satellites that we're constructing are not built to work with nature?
Very definitely. They have a propulsive charge, and it takes a tremendous thrust to get the thing off the ground. If you know the secrets of nature, the laws of nature, and so forth, it would propel very nicely. You could fly it.
All right, this is fine. Do the Venusians know this?
Very definitely.
Well, what is the big production with all of this philosophy? Why not just tell us how to get this thing up? If they can build these Bentleys, I think that's the term that you've used, Bentleys.
That's right.
And incidentally, how long does it take to make this trip between Venus and the Earth in a Bentley? Have you ever gotten this information?
Very definitely. It takes 24 hours from the Earth to Satellite 5, another 24 hours out
to Earth. From Earth to Satellite 5,
yes.
24 hours?
I know. I've computed it, too. It's about 200 miles an hour, I think it is.
The Satellite 5, not the...
Wait, now, what was the distance to Satellite 5?
10,000 miles. I've worked it out.
10,000 miles.
And 24 hours.
Now, what happens when we get to Satellite 5? It takes us how long to get to Venus?
Another 24 hours.
To get to Venus.
That's right.
Now, that's the thing that throws me.
Be careful of the trap there. There's a trap. I saw a newspaper reporter go off the deep end there.
I'm ready to jump, Dad. Tell me.
All right. Well, it's like an equation. You know the distance from Earth to Satellite 5, which is 10,000 miles. That has been given us.
All right.
Therefore, that can be accomplished in 24 hours.
Right.
But be careful, because from there out to the planet Venus, we don't know the distance. And we do not know whether there's an acceleration of speed or whether, as some of in many, many books on the subject, and I'm thinking that they're quite true, that there is a passing into the fourth dimension temporarily or something like that.
What does this mean, passing into the fourth dimension?
It would mean that attaining a very great acceleration and by a change of the physical body of the craft itself, let us say, that it would penetrate into another dimension and at that time not be relegated to the laws of speed, distance, and things as the way we think of.
Bob, this is a very fascinating question. If you throw the space vehicle off into another dimension, then you've got to bring it back into our dimension in order to get it to land on the planet Venus. That's because navigation, interdimensional navigation.
Very true, and they've got a warning for you, too. They say that if the Air Force maintains that from here to the Moon or here to Venus is a straight line, they're in all kinds of trouble because you need a map. And
Bob, I'm sorry,
I'm going to have to interrupt a moment, gentlemen. Here's a bulletin from the WOR newsroom. We'll bring you any additional bulletins as we get them in our WOR newsroom. I'm sorry, gentlemen, I have to interrupt. Continue, please. Ellery?
Yes, Bob, you were saying that our Air Force or our people think that the direction from the Earth to Venus is in a straight line. They are mistaken. I don't think they assume that. They assume that the direction can't possibly be a straight line. It goes through sections of a parabola or a hyperbola or an ellipse as the most economical way of utilizing available known fuel. So I don't think you have any quarrel with them at all. I think they will agree.
Yes, our quarrel is quite different, Ellery, because I'm not, I would, in an amateurish way, feel that a parabola or an ellipse would be what the ordinary person would call a straight line. I'm speaking about something that might resemble a zigzag. Owing, as Cimitrelli has said, to fields of very solid matter. And to conclude her sentence, this would bring a person to a very untimely end if he were to pursue a straight line out.
In other words, if you were going to navigate from the Earth to the planet Venus, you would get yourself a little balled up if you didn't have very exact navigational direction. You would need, in effect, a harbor pilot to guide you in.
True, perhaps. True. They say that we would need a map, which they would be happy to furnish at the time. They have a prediction, by the way, that I might slide in here. I've given it some thought and would publish it one of these days, shortly, is that they say that the United States will definitely have a man on the moon in 1958.
What's this again?
It's a little prediction, John.
Well, let me hear this again, please.
The Venusians have said that in the race to put a man on the moon, the United States will win it. We will not wait until the year 59, but it will be done in the year 58.
That we will have a man on the planet...
On the moon.
In 58. Now, you believe
it. I have gone out on the limb with the Venusians.
We have.
Very successfully.
We have, man.
And if you'll recall, on your party line on October 21st, we very clearly said that the Ventlers would fly in force and make token landings in November. And they said the same thing themselves on both CBS and NBC television programs in Portland, Maine. So here I go again.
Okay.
The Venusian, speaking through Miss Brady. The television cameras were on Miss Brady. She was in France. The announcer was speaking
right. Mm-hmm. You're right. But, of course, what's the story now? Are you telling us now that the saucers landed here in November?
Of course they did.
Well, I just wasn't aware of it.
Well, we all read the same papers, and Ellery here has mentioned that he has quite a bit of facts these days to confront him.
Well, I try to get rid of all the facts.
Good.
Don't get me wrong. Now.
Because I'm very much afraid that what is factual on the headlines of a paper today is thought of by many people as not being fact in another sense.
Well, that's exactly the idea. You see, all through history, we have people have been finding out what they that what they had thought was an absolute fact wasn't anything near a fact at all. It was just a fiction or imaginary or a misunderstanding. So that it is very important to get rid of facts continuously.
Here's one that bothers me. I use it as a reference point. I speak sometimes as a space fiction that the Associated Press or anyone goes in for on the headlines of the papers. Reference has been made many times to a 3,000-mile radar. I would like to know of one application of a 3,000-mile radar since I have read those headlines and the fact that the Army has it. There are many things that it could have done recently, if you'll just think of history since it came out a few months ago.
Well, Bob, there is preparation underway now for a multi-million and even billion-mile radar for effective functioning in the near future.
Yes, but let's get down to cases of 3,000-mile one that's been heralded very widely.
Yes.
We've had trouble, I'm thinking in terms of aircraft that were lost or missiles that went astray and things like that, and this would have helped out. I don't know where it's located in the United States, but 3,000 miles is a beautiful sweep.
Well, I know, that is a problem.
We've got a number of telegrams here. Let me remind our listeners once again, just in case you've joined us for the first time, I know that in my brief experience in this business, namely some 3 years, no, it's going on to 4 years now, that I find that on Decoration Day weekends and 4th of July and Labor Day, that we do manage to get some listeners who joined us for the first time. And let me take just a moment, first of all, to welcome you. I hope that you're with us, and if you're driving on the highway, please take it easy. And we sit around and talk for some 37 and a half hours during the week. We talk with many interesting people. We have a teletype in our studio. This means that if you'd like to participate in the discussion, if you'd like to ask a question or give us your opinion about something, you're more than welcome to do so.
just pick up your telephone in any community where you may be, and we do cover some 27 states tonight with the WOR signal. Ask for the Western Union operator. Tell the operator that you'd like to send a telegram to Long John, WUX, W-U-X, New York City. And within 3 or 4 minutes, after you place that message with the Western Union operator in your community, we should have it on our teletype machine. Now, I've mentioned this time and time again. I'm very sorry to say we have a number of telegrams that I am not in a position to read because we do not have names. In other words, some people have given us initials. If you don't want us to mention your name, we certainly will not mention it. We'll respect your wishes. Just put two words in the body of the telegram, no name. And I noticed that a couple of people are not using their own names, and we cannot use the telegram because we have to check back and everything. However, I am reading them, and at least I'll have a knowledge of what you're trying to get across. Maybe I can incorporate it into our discussion in the morning with Bob Ewing and with Ellery Lanier. Bob Ewing, E-W-I-N-G. Bob Ewing claims that he's a representative of the planet Venus, and Ellery Lanier claims he's a fact editor of a science fiction publication. Fantastic science fiction. Let me read a couple of these telegrams. On our planet, a woman's childbearing period is about 33 years. If these Venusians live to such an advanced age and remain youthful, how come their planet isn't overrun with people when they live 300 years? Alice Gamboli. Gamboli. Did you care to answer that? I certainly can.
It was answered in reference to the... to make a parallel here, the Venusians have given us to understand that they are vegetarians, that they do not eat the bodies of either fowl, fish, or animals.
That is a Venusian fowl, fish, or animal.
That's true, yes.
They haven't imported animals from Earth, perhaps.
No, they have their own, Ellery. They have, if they went on, the next sentence on this tape is, we eat the eggs from the chickens, we have the milk from the cows, the honey from the bees, and so forth. Now, the question was raised by a member of our class, how then, if you do not slaughter the cows, do you keep from being overrun by just plain cows? The answer came back very quickly. We have a planned system. The cows are permitted to die of old age and so forth. Now, getting into the subject of the humans, they have merely planned their families. They have told us that the average size of a family is about 4 people. Mother, father, 2 children. There are exceptions, greater families and small families. Timothy Raleigh has said that they certainly can marry or not marry, and she has chosen not to marry. Here's another telegram from Maplewood, New Jersey. Venus is goddess of love, not beauty. That causes quite a bit of amusement with the Venusians. They have their humorous side, and I would like you all to hear Cimitrolli's voice to get the feeling I get when I hear you say that. Cimitrolli says that it is perfectly ridiculous, really, that you Earth people have given us the attribute of the planet of love, and Mars is a consequence of the planet of war. And your mythology and so forth has carried along these stories, and of course they're quite untrue. No planet stands for any one thing.
This telegram in reference to Venus is the goddess of love, not beauty, is from Jared Gilbert of Maplewood, New Jersey. Here's one from Brooklyn, from Martin Robinson. Atmosphere of Venus, carbon dioxide, no oxygen surface.
temperature above boiling point of water. How can life exist?
It's on your Bob.
Very interesting, because...
Oh, let me moderate this. I'm asking you, Ellery, or don't you know?
Well, I don't want to present any factual material. I have some factual material, but I wouldn't...
Some fantastic material.
I wouldn't want to intrude this factual material.
That's a tough question, Joe. No, it's for you, Bob.
The kettle calling the pot fantastic here. Well, it's very, very interesting on that we hope that you'll make it interesting by having a good answer to that one. That's a rough one. We have a long tape recording because when we make a public appearance, I make a tape. And I was quite amazed at the time, the battle of wits going on between my Venusians on one side and the eight experts from Cape Canaveral on the other side of the auditorium stage. And Johann went very carefully into the subject of how the covering of carbon dioxide was, in effect, a protective envelope, which shut them off from many of the excess heat and cold and so forth. And this meteorologist, by the way, did agree completely that that was true there. Then, going into the subject of oxygen, there is quite a difference in my Venusian. By the way, these are not cold, stereotyped voices or something like that, or sort of a Frankenstein talking. Campbell is an exceptionally young pilot. He always, regardless of a television, camera on, or whether...
Campbell is one of the persons who received messages from the Venusians, or is Campbell one of the Venusians?
He is one of the Venusians.
He is one of the Venusians.
A pilot. They kid him. He is the young one, trying to learn everything there is to learn at once, tripping over his feet in the process. He's only 75 years old.
Well, does this 75-year-old youngster have his... temporal suddenness satellite 5, which is over New York City now? Did he make a flight from satellite 5?
You just moved that satellite again. It's satellite 2 for New York City.
Oh,
I
beg your pardon. Satellite 2 over New York City.
Right.
I was going to ask you, we can assume now that while we are sitting here at these microphones, satellite 2 is over our heads and quite likely listening to what we are saying here tonight.
Very definitely. And the man doing the job is Kira. He is communications officer of Satellite 2. We speak with him when we are north. I think you realize, I want everybody to realize, I don't do the speaking without Miss Brady. She is their instrument. So when we are north, the minute that Miss Brady goes into trans, if we have a particular desire to talk to our own satellite, or we're just keeping schedule, this thing, by the way, is on a very definite schedule, Tuesdays and Thursdays at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, wherever we are, in the New York area, immediately, Kiros comes on.
This Venusian Kiros, who is sort of anchored permanently over New York City, in effect, this is his assignment,
yeah.
I would say. Did you give him a title? Does he have a title?
No Venusian has a title. They have given us very clearly to indicate. So each time I read a book where someone is purportedly a Venusian and has a lovely long title, we can't agree.
I want to ask you, Bob, there is a British author, Clive Staples Lewis, I believe, by name, who wrote a story called Terra Longa, which you may or may not have come across, in which he described a civilization on the planet Venus. I don't know whether he claims this is a true description of life on the planet Venus. And it was very interesting in Terra Longa, the people living on the planet Venus were, in a sense, free of original sin. They were living in a continuous state of goodness and purity, honesty and love. There was no evil thought or evil intention in their lives. However, from what you are saying, your reports about life on the planet Venus are not quite what the Terra Longa description was, and the people on Venus actually are living more of a human type of life than was described in this story, where these people were living in a kind of paradise, because what I gather is that according to your information, life on Venus is not a paradise as such, or would you say it is?
Well, we'd have to get a dictionary here and dig up the word paradise. Yes, I think in our average sense, because as the Venusians point out, they have developed, along with their other developments, which are exceeding our own, the business of clairvoyance, of perception, of each other's feelings, emotions, and thoughts, and things like that. They do not, as a matter of fact, among themselves, use speech. It is mental, and telepathy is a great thing. Therefore, I can reply to you that yes, they do live in essential goodness, because, as Cimitrelli has pointed out, when a boy meets girl on Venus, they automatically know what each one is best suited for. They haven't the...
Does that mean that the element of romance is eliminated in the sense that lovers don't have to seek out each other's inner secrets and inner desires and wishes and dreams, since they know that you know each other directly?
I would have to reply almost yes to that, but I would like to say this, that it's hardly the topic for Cimitrelli, a teacher of philosophy. The Venusians are not going into those kind of subjects with us. We as a class don't ask them.
I see. Well, I want to ask...
However, apply it this way, that Hamamatsu, you might ask me, how did he get to be leader of Venus? As Cimitrelli has replied to that question, everyone automatically knows who is the best man for a position. Therefore, Hamamatsu was selected as a member of the Council of Elders. The man who had been selected with the greatest length of seniority is leader. Then he resigns after 8 years. He leaves the office. The next man in seniority takes over for 8 years. It is now Hamamatsu's turn, and he is in office 8 years, and then the man behind him becomes. So everyone, there's no voting, no political parties, no discussion about it.
In effect, there you would say there is no question of whether there is to be democracy or not democracy.
No.
The question as such doesn't exist
that
on the planet Venus. In effect, there is a benevolent government of an individual who assumes his power through the, you might say, the inner wisdom of the people.
True.
And, that could be called an absolutely pure democracy if you wanted to.
Oh, yes, yes. We've got to call it that.
An absolutely pure kind of democracy.
Sure.
And would that mean, too, that there is a great degree of personal freedom?
There is, even for the selection of jobs and duties and things like that. That a man does what he is best fitted for and what he likes the best. There is no monetary system, they barter. The Bentleys, for example, getting back to these flying saucers, are, for the most part, by the way, constructed on Mars. They are not a Venusian manufacturer.
No, this is news to me, Bob.
No, they haven't the ore for it. They bring ore in that the Martians have, and I often, in my own mind, think of Mars from their description as being the Pittsburgh of the universe, the Martians being very clever in that direction. The Venusians going north...
Are you implying that these flying saucers are constructed of iron?
You
reference to Pittsburgh, and I'm thinking of the steel.
Well, I'm thinking of other ores that would be the equivalent.
I see.
The, I have the names of the various ores and things, but they're not found. And by the way, I can tell you something that they do not have on Venus, and that is iron, as we find. That they don't have. And that leads to buying the story sometimes, if you read, of the flying saucers coming in and taking samples of vegetation and ores and things like that from the face of our atmosphere.
Bob, the Venusians apparently count familiar with what is happening on Earth right now.
Extremely.
In effect, our gentleman Venusian Heros is right over our heads as we shoot at this microphone, at these microphones at the moment. And they can't see what is going on in Times Square if their barrels are knocked down. But you can't quite see them because of this 10,000 or whatever mile it was distance.
No, you've got the satellite out 10,000 miles.
Oh,
but the satellite is merely the garage. They keep the flying saucer.
Now, let me see now. Satellite 2 is over New York City.
Somewhere in the area. In other words, it might be 200 or 300 miles one way or the other.
And Kiros is in charge of satellite...
Of communication.
Yeah. Who's in charge of satellite 2, which is over in New York? Do you know that?
I do not know, no.
And I'm very curious. Have the Venusians been studying our Earth in past centuries, for example,
or
just rather recent?
For thousands of years, and we could take a quick trip back to a question you asked a few moments ago, Ellery. As to the discussion, I'm sorry, it was in the form of a telegram, the oxygen and the carbon dioxide. And it was quite humorous in this high school auditorium at Cocoa, Florida in February when... a gentleman very vehemently pounded the table and said, as the telegram said, there is no oxygen on Venus, there is no water, and so forth. And this pilot, Hamble, backed right into a corner a little bit, and he came back, and he said, many times when I'm visiting the planet Mars, I was thinking of, by the way, this time on the water, he said, I am a man of great curiosity. I have seen the canal. I understand the canals, and I have examined the canals. You would have to make the trip to see for yourself. Johann, on the question of oxygen, said, our people have been studying Earth for many years. Our scientists gave us to understand that there was no atmosphere. So after many years of trying to operate our ventilators and come into close proximity with Earth, finally we did that, and what did we find? And the answer was really very good. He said, people.
When did this happen, Bob? I didn't quite get the dating of this event.
Well, I don't think either you or I could date it. They didn't date it at the time. It was 1,000 years ago, plus or minus.
That would be in Earth's turn. What century would that be on Earth? I mean, don't have a quick calculation on that.
I can't tell you, really, Ellery, whether it was 2,000 years, 1,000, how many?
Well, this was approximately in the year 968 A.D., let us say.
We are
getting into the medieval period, and we're leaving Byzantium behind. Have the Venetians transmitted any information about what they observed on Earth at that time?
No. Mr. Ali, if you and I would run over the Egyptian situation a little bit. Mr. Ali was discussing the propulsion of the Ventlers, saying that they are propelled to some degree by musical notes and also by concentrations of light. He asked a rhetorical question then, stating that they use this as a force of energy, deriving it from the universe, and they put it this way to us. How else do you think that the great blocks of your pyramids were raised, except in such a manner?
Oh, you are saying that the pyramids were built with the same kind of force that is now, that is being used to drive the ventilators through space or through these multi-dimensions?
Yes.
You didn't know this?
I'm sorry, I did not.
Taking of energy from the universe.
I mean, this sounds like a fact, and I have learned it. You know this,
well, there's a story I think I've seen written about a man in Florida. I read it not too long ago that worked in isolation. He was building a home for a girl from Greece, I believe. And I think it's getting to be a tourist attraction now that there are tremendous blocks that he erected and put in place absolutely single-handed. And from whence they come, how they got there, and how he raised them alone into this beautiful, tremendous house or palace or whatever we might call it, nobody's going in.
Well, I know that many so-called primitive people have means of construction which defy the ingenuity of engineers. A similar phenomenon.
Well, I'm going to have to interrupt a moment, gentlemen, and take care of a little piece of business there. That's Brady. I think I can include you. That you've never had the opportunity of being in a Ventlin. You've never been to Venus. You've never been to Mars. Now, of course, you could toss this question back to me, and I will know it. If it's a fool about the fact that I haven't been to these planets.
because I have no contact with Venusians and Martians.
We have had people on this program. We've had Howard Menger, we've had Buck Nelson, we've had George Van Tassel, we've had Dan Fry, and, well, I could go on for hours just giving you a list of names, of people who claim that they've either been in a flying saucer, you use the label Ventla, and also other people who claim that they've been to these other planets, and yet you seem to have so much knowledge about the planet Venus and the planet Mars, and yet you've never been invited to visit.
John, your question has two answers. First of all, the Venusians have told us repeatedly that our time is coming, and we are going. There's a gentleman who told us
our time is coming.
Mr. Barry, myself, and others from our unit.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, John, I'll invite you right now. You may go if you wish, because I have been told that I may invite those of the press and those whom I wish to go at the time. There's a gentleman in Philadelphia, Mr. S. Bell Lutch, who had printed in the newspapers an offer of a trip to the moon. On that stationery you've been describing, I simply wrote him very factually. I said, well...
Bob, what was this man's name? I didn't get it.
Bell Lutch. And I wrote him quite matter-of-factly. I thought I don't know how this might be arranged, but and I can't guarantee the moon. And I'm wondering what kind of proof you would want. Photographs obviously could be faked. A piece of ore might be brought into the thing. And we'll take up this matter. So I took the matter up with the Venusians, and they said, of course, such a trip will be arranged, and we may invite anyone at the time. And, of course, they're not taking us either to Venus or to the moon. However, a trip for Satellite 5 would be in order. So Mr. Lash's lawyer called, Mr. Rahill from Philadelphia called me in Florida, and we discussed it over the phone, and he has Mr. Lash's permission to settle for a trip to Satellite 5, and that will honor the offer. Now, there's one other part to that question. I said there were two. The Venusians, when they began flying in November, made very certain in telling us that they stayed deliberately away from us, because it is not their wish that any one person on Earth might receive the type of prestige or notoriety or infamy or however we wish to put it that would inflate their ego and their head, finally, and render them probably useless to the Venusians.
Well, how come Miss Brady and yourself were in effect chosen, Bob?
Well, wait a moment. I think the question would be,
I've talked to Bob a couple of times before.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if Bob was chosen. Brady, Miss Brady was chosen, am I right? Or were you chosen too?
I was chosen.
I'm trying simply to understand.
Yes.
I didn't hear that, John.
A year ago, this approximate date was about my first encounter with the Venusians in a small discussion, an interview between myself and the Venusians through Miss Brady. And they said at that time that my past history and who I was and so forth had been investigated, that I was a part of Satellite 5, that I was chosen for this work, and this was my work. And being one of the unpaid representatives of Venus, I have, since as the year has gone by, realized that, as a woman in Washington once said to me, she said, you know, getting into this thing, she said, I've passed the point of no return. And that was my trouble. I got to a point where I couldn't turn around and go back again, because they'd laid my work out.
And I'll make a cryptic comment that regardless of Miss Brady and us and myself, or any other contacts that they have, they intend to go ahead with their mission, whether we like it or not.
Mm-hmm.
What do you... Well, wait a minute. I have a couple of more questions about
Howard Menger and George Van Tassel and people like that. But first, let me bring our listeners up to date with the news.
In reading these telegrams, Bob, I know that the listeners that have sent in questions, they naturally want you to answer them because we don't consider Mr. Lamere to be a Venusian authority.
He's in charge of facts.
That's right. What makes the Venusian happy or unhappy? And the second question is, do they have sports? This is from Sidney Wood. Bob?
Well, the question about being happy or unhappy was put to the Venusians by a television announcer, Larry Garrity,
of station WCSH, Portland, Oregon, Portland, Maine, correction.
And he said, if I were to tell you, he was speaking with Johann, through Miss Brady in front of television cameras, that I did not believe you now, would that make you unhappy? Would it make you angry? Johann said, no, that would not make us angry, that we get angry, as you people do, yeah, but that would not do it. We are sometimes unhappy when our work does not go correctly and so forth. So, Mr. Garrity turned around and asked him, do they have humor? Are there things that make you happy and things like that? Johann came right back and he said, yes. I find it quite humorous to us, we hear, that you do not believe this method that I am using to contact you. And there's one little more to that, if this gentleman would like just a little answer. Mr. Garrity tried to trap Johann, and he said, do you have art? Do you have poetry? Do you have novels? Johann came back with the affirmative. Yes, we have all those things. And Mr. Garrity said, all right, I want you to give me a poem. Johann came back very quickly. I like the tape. I like the authenticity to the way it came back. Johann said, I am a pilot. I'm not a poet, but I will say to you that when you see through our shining through your skies, our shining ships coming to you, we wish you well upon the earth beneath, or something like that. It was a little stanza that rhymed very nicely and was very well done. So they do have the humor.
Pardon me. Here's a couple of more telegrams. This lady has requested me not to use her name. I would like to say greetings and God bless you from a very busy New Yorker to members of Venus Satellite Number 2 through WOR. That's the message, and I imagine that the lady would certainly like to extend her greetings also to Satellite Number 5. She didn't mention it in the telegram, but evidently.
May I thank her?
Oh, certainly, certainly.
I'd like to thank her very much, and also to go on record, as I sit here this evening and Miss Brady sits in Florida, that of the hundreds of letters that we have in our possession, all filed away alphabetically, and we're keeping good track of everything, neither of us have any type of derogatory letter. Hold
up a minute. Wait a while. There's another, here you got, you can't look for him, man. This is from New York. A gentleman by the name of William Klutz, K-L-U-S. Dear Long John, all of these fellas that claim to be going to Mars, Venus, and other planets have never brought back one concrete evidence. I think it means one piece of concrete evidence. Of being there. These fellas must be communist sympathizers, or else they wouldn't allow the Russians to get so far ahead of us in the space race. I believe Sputnik number 1 went up, I think it was on October 4th. I stopped for gasoline in a small gas station, and my friend, the attendant, said to me, my wife has a question, and I would like you to ask the Venusians this. He wrote it down on a piece of paper. I thrust it in my pocket. It so happened that I was quite anxious to speak with him, of course. So we had an immediate contact.
And I asked them point blank for the filling station attendant's answer. I said, why then did you permit Sputnik 1 to be a success? Chemichori came back immediately without a pause or hesitation. She said, Robert, it does not contain warlike material. It serves no purpose militarily. And it is merely a scientific object, so we permitted it to fly. As to people bringing back things from Venus, we have no information that would certify that anyone who had gone to Venus and returned, except in astral flight, which to a Venusian, of course, is a very real method of transportation and a very real thing. However, the Venusians assure us that they have a very great many of our people from Earth.
Are you
not yet? Oh, yes. The Venusians have stated that they have a large number of our people on Venus, adequately taken care of in special homes.
Have they kidnapped these people?
Proper atmosphere, yes. Miss Berry has a story, or Miss Brady has a story that happened.
Bob, you said that the communications office of Kiros is anchored over New York City in satellite 2. Might he be in mind to kidnap the party line? Is that a possibility?
Well, it's a possibility, yes. Probability, who knows?
I'm holding on to the table.
Well, I have a hard job getting in 1440 Broadway. Do you mean to say, Bob, that the Venusians are kidnapping Earth people?
Kidnapping is a local term, I think. Let us say
you can use any term that you want.
We've got 99 years for that.
Yes, they point out that, now getting back to the story, it happened in Ocala, Florida.
The parties concerned were a deputy sheriff and members of the civilian defense. And the occurrence happened prior to my association with Miss Brady. However, Miss Brady formed the Daytona Beach Flying Saucer Club. They invited Major Kehoe and had him lecture there, and they had other persons lecture. This sighting at Ocala, the deputy sheriff, as I recall, was unable to come in person, but a couple of his staff and others of the civil defense drove approximately 120 miles, came over, and lectured to the audience, saying that the deputy sheriff would go on record that he was coming down the highway, that right behind his tall car, there was a flying saucer, flying very, very low, almost creeping up on him, and suddenly zoomed up when, on both sides of the highway, there appeared the inevitable telephone wires that keep private pilots like myself from making quick landings on highways without watching what we're doing. He feels that the abduction, perhaps, of himself and his car was prevented by that. There are other stories. For example, if you go through the annals of aviation history, I believe there's a story that Miss Brady and I have gone over. It happened at Fort Lauderdale, Florida, where on a navigational, routine navigational flight, a Navy, Westland Gillian about that time, went out toward the Bahamas, and he didn't return. Another ship went out to see why he didn't come back, and that ship didn't return. A third ship went out and hasn't returned, and finally there were either five or six ships that didn't return. For no reason at all. Weather clear, everything fine. Bahamas, I've flown there, are about 60 miles offshore. We've got a couple of more telegrams here. This is from R.D. Schofield. From Bob Ewing. Verify story of the Lucian dog or other stories of people who have appeared on the program concerning planet Venus. Also, can he tell us more about the sciences and arts on the planet? And has he any information on the nature of domestic animals as pets on Venus? Are these folklore? We are told that
Ben Fry was very definitely taken.
May I interrupt you just like that? Our listeners will know. We'll take these one at a time then. Dan Fry is the man that claims that he was in a flying saucer and that he was connected with the Aerojet Corporation at the time. He flew from the White Sands Proving Grounds in New Mexico to New York and back in about 32 minutes. Now, do you want to tell us what they told you about Dan Fry?
Yes, they verify the book that Mr. Fry wrote, The White Sands Incident, saying that they picked him up at White Sands, flew him back, well, flew him to New York and returned in 38 minutes, yes.
What about Van Tassel, who owns Giant Rock Airport in near Yucca Valley, California?
They verify that they have used Mr. Van Tassel, yes.
It's sort of half-tense, isn't it?
Yes, John.
In other words, you're saying then that Van Tassel is not being contacted by Finucci?
We, at this time.
Yes, at that particular time, yes.
What about George Adamski?
They relate the incident, as Mr. Adamski does, that the pilot met and spoke with him. They gave us the name of the pilot. I don't have it at the tip of my tongue. He understood perfectly what Mr. Adamski was thinking and wanted to convey. He did not speak English. And he knows that Mr. Adamski understood a very small fraction of what he wanted to convey to Mr. Adamski. The rest of Mr. Adamski's travels and work and so forth was after flight.
What about Buck Nelson, the man with the 385-pound Venusian dog?
After flight.
The dog, too? John... I haven't tried too much. I have learned indirectly on tapes and questions asked them the factors I gave them. I haven't really tried and tried to investigate the authenticity of everyone else. I can tell you this, that Rick Williamson visited us in Florida, made a very nice lecture. I personally sat in on a private conference that he had with the Venusians. John McCoy was there at the time. And
wait a minute, you sat in on what?
A private interview that he had with the Venusians.
That Williamson, the anthropologist, had with the Venusians?
Yes.
You mean through Minnesota?
Right.
Yeah. Oh, I see.
We have many people who call us Florida who are in the field and who are not in the field, but merely have an active interest. When they come to Florida, as Ellery mentioned here a while ago, with this question, are you chosen? They seem to come with some kind of a purpose because there is a way of establishing that very quickly. Given a trance situation with Miss Brady, they talk with various Venusians or people from other planes of existence, let us say. And it was a very, very interesting occasion that Rick Williamson, John McCoy, and Mrs. Laura Burgess of Grand Rapids were sitting there. And the Venusians consider that they are a part of our unit. They will work with us.
I didn't know. I just received the telegram.
I'm quite amazed. Gary Yelsman, the well-known photographer, evidently is not at Giant Rock Airport. He was there last year, and I heard that he's going to represent the Globe Photo.
He's working for Globe Photo this year out at Guy Rock. However, we have a message here from him, and we may take care of that after a little while.
Here's another one from Ralph Einstein.
Mr. Ewing, please explain how chickens, eggs, cows,
or the cow's milk, etc., can exist on a planet when the surface temperature is over that of boiling water. Please don't change the subject or double talk.
Well, it's a matter of opinion that neither of us can settle, but
I did not add in that last phrase. This is part of a telegram. For a moment, it slipped me.
I want to read it?
Yes. No one on Earth knows whether or not for sure the temperature is over that of boiling water on Venus. It's incapable of proof. And I would say this, that I won't give an inch to the scientists here. I certainly think they don't know any more about it than we do with our alleged Venusian contact.
Well, John, when you're out in public like this with your hair down, I know what Miss Brady and I always, in public utterances, by the way, have said this, that we have never asked anyone to believe. We're doing what we're told to do. We're receiving what information we get. My tape recorders don't lie. And what are you going to do with the information, for example? My Venusians say that they live these kind of lives. They have a temperate climate. They described the contrasting climates between the valleys and the mountain peaks as reaching out of the...
Well, this is the Decoration Day weekend, and I...
Why did you say allege Venusian contact?
Well, John, when you're out in public like this with your hair down, I know what Miss Brady and I always, in public utterances, by the way, have said this, that we have never asked anyone to believe. We're doing what we're told to do. We're receiving what information we get. My tape recorders don't lie. And what are you going to do with the information, for example? My Venusians say that they lead these kind of lives. They have a temperate climate. They've described the contrasting climates between the valleys. As reaching our freezing and our hot summer weather and so forth.
What is amazing about having all of these tape recordings?
I must have 5,000 hours of tape downstairs myself.
But it's not
the recordings of the voice from a Venusian. The fact that Miss Brady appears to go into a trance, and that during the time she's in this trance state, that a voice comes from her body, does not necessarily mean that it's the voice of a Venusian. It can be just Miss Brady's voice.
John, you're asking me to fire more than one stage of a rocket here. Generally speaking, I've explained that there are many stages to a rocket. There are three stages. And generally, when it's necessary to discuss flying saucers by themselves, we fire just one stage. The questions tonight mostly have evolved around the flying saucers, let us say, and we've gotten into stage two a little bit. That who are the people flying the flying saucers? And that would be stage three. Now, Miss Brady has demonstrable psychic ability. I have consulted the Parapsychology Foundation here in New York. I have written letters to J.B. Rhine's Parapsychology Laboratory at Duke University. And I will probably be in Duke University Wednesday. And I would like very much the opportunity of speaking with Mr. Rhine, because, you see, what I would like to know, you've made a statement that you've been writing letters to Rhine. All right. Has he answered your letters?
That's... I have no knowledge on what's going
on. I love this. This is a beautiful one.
You can carry out and
That's a beauty. Incidentally, Sam Vandervoort is with us.
Well-known photographer,
kind enough to stop in. Sam used to come in there often. He'd sit around and talk with us. But his new studio, and because of the tremendous amount of work that is coming, and certainly Sam is entitled, he does a great job, but he just hasn't had the opportunity of joining us lately. Very happy to be in this building. Sam is the young photographer who took all the pictures that appeared in Argosy magazine in the April edition of this year, in conjunction with the story.
John, you were asking me about Bailey. And so what's possible value?
Go ahead. All right. What is it, Bob?
John, you were comparing your $5,000 of tape with what
price of $5,000? I didn't say what value. I don't doubt that you have hundreds of hours of tape with voices on it. But how does this prove? Because you have a voice on a tape that is the voice of a Venusian.
John, the thing was this, that I tried to tell you all about the various ramifications of our work to a recording company here in New York. This afternoon, I delivered four tape recordings.
I personally
can't explain them. I doubt if anyone can do a good job all in one man. I've taken them to the heads of various universities. These tape recordings are in ancient Hebrew, Aramaic, Arabic, Hindu, and Persian. They're the most beautiful songs that anyone ever heard. This company is considering releasing them for long play records. I can't explain it.
I can't explain the matter being perfect.
But it is very beautiful. Some of them are by little Venusian girls singing in their song about their valleys, their hills, and so forth. Aside from that, we have tape recordings which go into completely different things than the flying saucers. And we have, for example,
I haven't very much, so do others that have heard them,
of, for example, Mr. Mahatma Gandhi.
It's just I know Ellery just moved back about 40 feet. I don't know, this was told to me before. I mean, we've heard that there's been tapes from Abraham Lincoln, and can you give us a couple other names? I have never heard these.
Yes, we have some Einstein tapes. We have a couple that, unfortunately, I think one night it was the tape recorder's fault. It got into a bad situation with the tape. And the second was the fact that Mr. Einstein's personality was not coming through correctly. He hasn't figured out how it was that he can teach telephone. And Mahatma Gandhi has only recently been developing that as perfectly as he should.
But, Ellery Landon. Are these tapes in the true voice? Are these hypnotized? Is this the advice of the medium receiving the voice?
Well, naturally, your second question is perfectly true. It has to be Miss Brady's voice. Deduct a little fraction for the female vocal cords involved, and you have the actual voice of the person. For example, Mahatma Gandhi speaks with a sad, anguished voice, speaking with his syllables coming out as though he had the teeth, as I picture him, speaking, the forces of Armageddon are again upon you, and so forth. Your earth is sorely troubled. My India.
Bob, I am lost in the wilderness. I am deep in the
underground. Before you get lost, let me remind you that this is WOR Radio, your station in New York, and this is Long John with the Party Line. I could just imagine people listening to the Party Line for the first time, and they're driving along, and they've turned that dial a couple of times. They've been listening to a little music, and possibly one particular number they were listening to they didn't enjoy. So somebody in the family said, you know, go ahead, switch the dial again, try to get some other station. And all of a sudden, they heard somebody talking. And they hear some people talking about going to Venus and the Mars and about 385 miles. Oh, this is enough to flip anybody on the highway. But we're talking this morning with Bob Ewing. That's spelled E-W-I-N-G of Edgewater, Florida. Mr. Ewing claims that he represents the planet Venus. Ellery Landier is with us. Mr. Landier is the fact editor of Fantastic Science Fiction. And we're very happy to have Lillian Landier with us. He's been sitting on the sidelines for a while, and during the last couple of minutes, she's been doing a couple of double-up flips here, making notes and so on. And, Lil, evidently you have a question, something that's a little puzzling.
Yes, I was puzzled about the voice transmission from historical personalities that your medium seems to get. The personalities that you have mentioned so far speak English, I would gather.
Both that and their native language, yes. Mr. Gandhi lapses into Hindu.
Your medium then transmits Hindu?
Oh, yes. And Lawrence of Arabia, I have asked him very definitely to give me a passage of Arabian because I am looking forward to the day that I will be able to get translators on all of this.
We've got a couple of translators
handy if you... Well,
you have any tape?
Not in my position in New York City. No, I have it near.
And I want to say this, pardon me, in all fairness to Bob Ewing, this happens quite often on the party line. You'll say to a man, have you got the tape? And he says, no, I haven't got it with me or I can't debug it. But Bob, the last time in October, had, I think, about 8 or 9 reels of tape out in Carteret, New Jersey. Now, this does not necessarily prove that the tape, that the messages on the tape were from Venusian. But Bob had the tape with him. And Bob had no idea that he was going to be on the program. Actually, he's visiting some relatives in Olean, New York, and I heard about it. And I called him on the phone about 4 or 5 days ago, and he said, John, I don't think I'll be able to make it because I have to fly back to Edgewater, Florida for the Decoration Day weekend. And I said, Bob, I would appreciate it very much if you could postpone your flight for another day because I'd like to have you on the party line while you're in this part of the country. So I say that in all fairness to Bob, that because he said he hasn't got the tape. This is not a way of trying to get out.
John, I have both the tape recorder, the amplifier, and about 50 tapes in the airplane, but
That's a Teterboro.
But you were adamant about not putting tapes
in
the air.
That's right.
So I respect your prohibition.
Right.
I would like to ask about the languages. Has anyone checked the accuracy
of your
medium's transcription of the language?
In July last year, I was invited to a committee to estimate me for a Carnegie Hall appearance, and it took place in the studio I'll think of the lady's name in a moment, perhaps, and various people were brought in. There was a Mrs. Greenfield, a medium from Brooklyn, whom I have, I do not have a correct address or know where to reach her. I looked through the phone book, and in playing one song, which was in Hebrew, Mrs. Greenfield left her chair, stood upright, and started to go around with the music a little bit. And as soon as she said, there is a song that we use in the church only every 20 to 30 years or something like that, an extremely out-of-the-ordinary song. So I have done what little I could, for example, I have unpublished poems of Rudyard Kipling and Elizabeth Barrett Browning.
Have you checked on this?
I have done it in an amateurish sort of way. I have gone over it with an English teacher the other day in Mr. Melville's work.
I like the tendency of Kipling, the way he hits these rounds and he repeats, that's my way of thinking.
What little poetry I know, it sounds like Kipling.
Does the
American have any difficulty in enunciating the various sound structures of the different other countries, although they come to it fairly clearly?
I think it would take a professional translator perhaps to figure it. I speak Portuguese and Spanish, and I understand French and Italian, and I know that the French I have heard come through Miss Brady, which is not tape recorded, by the way. This was in a private interview with someone, was perfect French. That I will.
Bob, I was saying you left me in a Paris a few months ago, and I can't make my way out of this Paris. Where are the Venetians involved, or are they involved with Miss Brady in this communication with people of the past?
Well, John was asking about the tapes, what they might prove, why I might be keeping them, what they might add up to. I fell into this totally accidentally. I started taping with Miss Brady's permission, and I just couldn't believe that the next morning in the Florida sunshine, my tape recorder would say anything back that happened. So at the present moment, I am writing a book called There Shall Be Signs and Wonders in the Skies, and going through my tape methodically by date and by the point to build up the weight of evidence as to what happened to us. In other words, why, to use Long John's original question, you think of yourself as being representatives of a planet Venus.
You mentioned earlier the name of another medium, another lady who apparently transcribed a Hebrew chant.
No, she heard my tape recording in Carnegie Hall, yes.
Oh, I see, I see. But she was a medium too?
Yes, she's a local medium.
Is it necessary for a medium to verify a tape?
No, no, she was verifying the language. She speaks Hebrew.
Why was it necessary for a medium who speaks Hebrew? Why not anyone who speaks Hebrew?
It wasn't my invitation. It was these people inviting them to judge me.
Yes, of course, but I wondered why she had to be a medium, necessarily.
It was their own idea, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
One medium likes to pass on the work of another medium.
I see.
Let me catch up on a few telegrams here. This lady has requested me not to use her name. Please give me the first date of the... Oh, I see, I have a correction down here. Please give me the first date of the arrival of the original Venusian and or Mars expedition. The man who spoke to you at 207 sounds so very much like you, it was shattering. At 207. I guess that the lady means the time, 207. Huh? Did you... You didn't speak at 207, did you, Sam? I don't know who spoke at 207 that sounds like me. I was speaking, possibly, at that time. However... Yeah, I know. I was receiving, too. I was receiving, and if you notice, the message was bouncing over to Alan Wilson. But Al is really not here. Well, he is here. The physical body is here, but he has projected the astral body. I hope that Al, will you find out what's happening with the Mystic Barber? I understand that he went up for Decoration Day to the moon. And maybe you can ask him to project yourself up there. Let's get back to these two questions in one. Well, here. Please. The lady would like the first date of the arrival of the original Venusian and or Mars expedition.
Are we speaking in the past tense when they arrived?
Well, if you happen to know when they're going to be back here in the world, you'd like to have that.
Oh, the closest
answer I have to that is... several references in tapes where they said that several thousand of your years, we began observing you.
Mm-hmm.
Have you received any, have you any tapes of Akhenaten above? You mentioned people like Gandhi and Kipling, I believe.
Yeah.
Do you have tapes of people going way back to the Egyptians? Do you have it? Have you received any?
Oh, yes. One of the principals of our Wednesday night class, he invariably opens the class and generally... speaks later on, is Nohin, a prophet of ancient Persia. And I'm not historian enough to date ancient Persia. I can't do that for you, Ellery.
Mm-hmm.
But Nohin is a source, a font of wisdom that is tremendous, and his teachings harmonize perfectly with those of Tsimisali. He occasionally refers to the teachings of Tsimisali, so we draw crosshairs on it. And narrow it down. And once again, let me say that in my case, that was very interesting to me, is that I can draw crosshairs as to what one person says and another says. For example, I do want to make a point, John. Here's a point. And another rule that we generally say in speaking is this, that my desire is to disprove all of this. And that is also misleading. In other words, if we could be free of the Venusians, we'd be very happy to.
Why?
And I... Why?
Yes, why?
Right in the middle of that meeting again at Cocoa, Florida, before the 350 people from the nearby Cape Canaveral guided missile base, Hamamatsu said very slowly and with a certain amount of sadness that it was very difficult to obtain an instrument who would work with them and be above ridicule and skepticism, but in their present instrument, they had found someone. However, and he has a sentence here, he said that he realized that even this instrument that we were using wishes very often to be real. Because
he's referring to Miss Brady.
Miss Brady, yes.
Mm-hmm. Hasn't Miss Brady been a trance medium for... almost all of her adult years?
Very true, John, but don't you realize most people who believe in mediumship will not buy the idea of the people on the other planets driving flying saucers. That's a totally different group that believes that.
You know, it's quite amazing to me. I think you mentioned that Miss Brady had the opportunity of giving her voice to Kipling.
Yeah.
In other words, that Kipling could use the voice, Mahatma Gandhi,
yeah,
and people like that. These people have been dead for a period of time.
So, John,
the Venusians, I'm assuming for the moment, are not dead.
The ones that are using very flesh and blood.
Very flesh. Well, now, how does Kipling get into this? Is Kipling now on the planet Venus?
He has not said where he is. I would just take for granted he was still in the fourth dimension with the others that we are customarily in contact with, yes.
Do you think that Kipling has been talking with Venusians since he has passed on?
It's very interesting. That certainly would be. Practically no one of spirit can do anything more than to acknowledge the existence of them. Mahatma Gandhi has a very beautiful take when he says, when you see the people from the other world coming through your skies in their shining vehicles, listen to them, for they are coming to help you. Now, there is a cross-reference from spirit into the Venusians. I'll tell you an interesting one. You know a spirit guide, of course.
Yeah, very familiar.
The Indians and the people who...
Well, I know Indians.
How familiar.
Yeah, always.
Miss Brady, a spirit guide, is very, very interesting. She is a bubbly, effervescent little character. Her name is Daisy. And her name on Earth was that of Daisy Crawford. She was buried in Atlanta, Georgia. And Daisy, being a spirit guide...
Have you ever checked on the burial place?
I haven't.
Has anybody? Have you ever written down to the authorities?
Not that I know of. I used to live in Atlanta, and I'd like to get up there and look around.
Mm-hmm.
But Daisy is quite mischievous. And I had quite a talk with her one day, and she says, she's new.
That's right.
And it was just before November when here we had told as many of the people as listened to the two television stations in Portland, Maine, and listened to you every night, that the flying saucers were going to fly in numbers in November, beginning in November, when the weather was right for them, and make token landings and so forth. And I went down to Washington and told a room full of colonels and majors in the Pentagon the same thing, and demonstrated on tape. Daisy, I was checking up with her, because, you know, being out on the limb, you teeter and you totter, as people say, that you must certainly be in, making all this up or something like that. And I said, Daisy, how are the pilots coming and everything? She says, well, Mr. Bob, she says, I snooped. And she says, the other night, she says, I heard that pilot, Johan, talking to another pilot. And he asked that other pilot, he said, are you on schedule? And the other pilot says, we think we're going to make schedule. And Johan said, let me tell you that Satellite 5 is on schedule. We are ready. And there are other times like that when Daisy said she wouldn't know Mr. Johan if she met him coming down the street. She talked to him the same way that our instrument said.
I would like to know about this spirit guide. Apparently, since you are all American in this venture, and your spirit guide conveniently seems to be American as well. How is it that you don't have a spirit guide who is, let's say, an Egyptian of an early dynasty or some such thing?
It's just the way that the ball bounces, and that just happened to be a plain ordinary American girl.
No, I'm not objecting to that. I'm delighted. What troubles me is that apparently we have many spirits floating about in ancient times and so on.
Well, we're not talking about spirits, we're talking about guides.
Yes. Well, they are spirits, are they not?
It's a bit like the army. There's a cadre that takes care of the new boys that are coming.
Oh, I see. They take over certain things.
Maybe it has a function.
May I
ask you?
May I ask you what an ancient spirit guide does, for example? Have you ever found out what other spirit guides do?
No, I'm quite naive at this. I am a Johnny come lately, as of 365 days.
I do notice a great degree of skepticism in your facial expression.
I'm not
saying that.
I try, but I can't win. You see, we've seen flying saucers by appointment, by schedule we see them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why sightings have always... There certainly must be transmediums in various other countries, England, possibly China, Japan. Do all of the transmediums in various other countries use American Indian guides? I don't know the answer to that one, John. I'd say that that was a heritage of our own civilization right here. The Indians were very advanced, developed people.
Because in my brief experience, talking with many people who told me about, and it would take Mark Foley, you've heard of Mark.
I've heard of him, yes, I know very little.
Mark has some mentors, Yada,
I believe there are 16 of them.
16, yeah, forward circle. Let's get away from Mark Foley. I had a note down here. I've written down a name and I'd like to ask you. Have you ever asked any of these Venusians about John Otto of Chicago?
I never have, no.
Why not? You know John, don't you?
I'm very guilty of slipping my mind on important questions. Simitrelli has told me time and time again, Robert, you must write the questions down if you...
This would be a rather important name.
John, let me say something here, too. I am never the boss of an interview with a Venusian.
Who does the interviewing?
They pick the subject and start off so quickly that all you can do is grab a hold and go with them unless you can stop them for a moment and pin them down to the answer of the question.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes into something that I would like to put forth to the panel here tonight. My greatest tribulation is working for the Venusians because they are the most difficult people to work for that I have ever seen.
May I ask you, Bob, how much time do you put in working for the Venusians?
For the last year, it has been practically full time. You know, I wish you wouldn't have mentioned this, because the gentleman who's bringing the food from Carnegie Delicatessen, he's afraid he's going to get paid off in Venusian money this week.
He'll see more of it than I have. This is WOR Radio, your station in New York, and this is Long John with the Party Line.
I'd like to take a moment to talk about Carnegie Delicatessen and Restaurant. That's located, Carnegie Delicatessen and Restaurant is located at 854 7th Avenue. That's on the corner of 55th Street and 7th. And their phone number is Plaza 72245, PL72245. They're open until 4 a.m. Not because they're sponsors, but because it's my honest opinion, I can definitely tell you that it's a wonderful place to eat. And you can call them. They'll be happy to deliver the food to your home or to your office. Of course, I don't imagine many people are in their offices right now. But if you happen to be employed in Midtown Manhattan and you like to stay in your office and have your lunch delivered, if you like corned beef, pastrami, tongue, roast beef, salami, turkey, sliced chicken, any of those things, you'll find them at Carnegie Delicatessen and Restaurant. And of course, they also have many specialties, such as chicken in the pot, boiled beef, jumbo hamburgers with sliced tomato, Indian relish, sliced Bermuda onion. Then they have the famous Carnegie cheeseburger. This is made with Venusian and American cheese, which gives it a delicate flavor.
I'm getting terribly hungry.
Remarkable. It's really wonderful, the Venusian cheese. So you keep it in mind, Carnegie Delicatessen Restaurant, 854 7th Avenue, the corner of 55th Street and 7th. And the number to call is Plaza 72245, and your hosts over there are Max, Lou, and Bernie. We have a couple of telegrams here, and I want to get a record ready. I wonder if you will do me a favor, Ellery. There's a telegram here, another one from R.D. Schofield. You can read that one, then you'll have to use that. You can take care of a couple of those for just one moment, please, if you will.
I have a description from this telegram.
Well, read this one now, and then you'll have to refer back to this one that arrived about 30 minutes
prior. From R.D. Schofield. Long John, thanks to answer to first part of earlier telegram. Please ask Bob Ewing to reply to remainder of other telegram. And this is the other telegram. Can Bob Ewing verify story of Venusian dog or other stories of people who have appeared on the program concerning planet Venus? Can he tell us more about the sciences and arts on the planet, and has he any information concerning status and nature of domestic animals as pests on Venus? Bob, I think you answered part of this.
Yes,
earlier.
The arts and the sciences.
So what about the pets?
I have no knowledge of pets whatsoever.
Pets on Venus, Venusian pets.
No, they speak of their birds quite often. They said once, there's an interesting tape made very early in the game, last June. They said that you will be successful in flight when you realize that wings are all right for the birds of your earth and ours, but not for airplanes.
There's another telegram here from Jerry Latanzio. I believe I have it correct. I hope I do. Bob says that Venus will stop war between us and Russia. Why wait? Hundreds are killed daily in rebellions, and eventual sneak attacks will kill thousands, perhaps millions. Why not show their force now and end killing tension and fear once and for all? This was from, I believe I gave his name, Jerry Latanzio.
That's a very good question, and one that I would like the answer to. I'm glad that I just said that the Venusians were very hard to work with because they don't come up with these little things that we would like them to do. However, they pointed out at the time of the Suez Crisis that they would influence it and affect it and stop it. And also, there was mention at approximately the same time that the mighty Chiang Kai-shek was about ready to leave his island and whack off at the mainland, perhaps, and that they were, in the case of Egypt specifically, that they would not permit that to go into open warfare. Their plan that when the new age, the new era that we are embarked upon at the present moment gets going good, they fully intend to rebuild a great deal of Egypt to its former splendor. So they find it difficult to accomplish some of these things. However, they say that they do it by impressing the minds of people concerned and involved.
We're going to take a 20-minute coffee break. And after that time, we'll be back with you. And we have a number of telegrams here, and no doubt we'll receive more. And I know that I have a number of questions for Bob Ewing. Bob Ewing claims that he represents the planet Venus. He's been telling us something about the Ventlers. That's a Venusian term for flying saucers, or UFOs, as some people call them on this planet. We have Ellery Lanier with us. Ellery is the fact editor of Fantastic Science Fiction. Sam Vandervert, well-known photographer, is with us. I love this telegram from Jerry Ellison, but...
Heard, John,
sir. Thank you, sir. It's a very good one. This is from Jerry Elsman. I'm their boy. Can't inflate closed minds. If the Venusian girls are well stacked, can get Playboy assignment. That's a beauty. Lillian Lanier is with us. And we hope that you'll be with us within just 20 minutes from now. This is WOR Radio, your station in New York. We arrived a little late this morning. Actually, we didn't expect you, and I'm glad that you were kind enough to join. I gather from your appearance that you were in bed listening to the discussion. I noticed that you didn't take off your pajama top, and I noticed that your pajamas are showing underneath the cuff of your trousers. There's certainly nothing wrong with that. I can imagine your excitement jumping out of bed and deciding to hop a cab and come down when you knew that
you
there were free sandwiches.
I wish for the purposes of just one person who's probably listening to this radio program that you say...
No, I don't underestimate the amount of listeners. We run eight numbers every night.
No, just for one particular person who might be listening right now, I wish you would say over the air that I didn't tell you I was in bed.
Thank you. Would you care to ask a question? I imagine that you have something in mind.
Ben, are you a blank?
He is. I have a question.
I yield to
you. People should sit in Florida and listen to this.
I have an idea that there are many listeners who heard Bob say earlier that he, as well as the medium, Enid Brady, would very much like to sort of be rid of the Venusians at some point, or possibly as soon as possible, that it is a bother to you both. Am I correct?
A bother would be the wrong word, that they are very hard taskmasters who don't fulfill our normal requirements for proof. They think that they do this, they do that, we should understand, and so forth.
Yeah, well, I understood you have been working very hard for the Venusians, and you feel perhaps you'd rather not work so hard anymore and tackle some other tasks.
You get to that feeling, and then all of a sudden the voice of Simitali comes through, and she starts in on you, and in exactly 42 seconds, you're back in the fold again.
Well, what I would like to know, and I'm sure it has occurred to some listeners, is why, for example, don't you and Enid Brady hand in your resignation?
We passed that point of no return that seems to be an attachment of this business, that there is so much to it. For example, the flying saucer element, you can forget about for a while. In other words, they aren't every day down here bustling about showing themselves. While in such a lull, you still have on the Wednesday night classes the Simitali philosophy coming through, her nutritional lectures, and development, things like that, which are good by themselves. They stand by themselves.
Well, you might partake of those and resign from the work, for example.
The work is really too fascinating, and the satisfaction comes. It's like the cycles of the manic depressive. They say who a person who leads a smooth life doesn't reach the highs nor the lows that are so...
Boy, let's pull the call up right now.
did you hear the highs and lows?
Yes, very definitely.
Boy, yeah. He's been rolling back those highs, and he never knew it had anything to do with philosophy.
Well, actually, unless I understand, is working over the Decoration Day weekend. He's back with the Roddy Potts group. And
yeah, but I heard him. He
that's a trio, isn't it?
He's taking
yeah,
time
four
off.
Men.
Oh, he's ghosting Roddy Potts' memoirs, isn't he?
Yeah. No. Well, Potts can't write. Ben, you evidently had some interest in the discussion. I think, in all fairness, we should give you the opportunity of asking Mr. Ewing a couple of questions.
Well, the thing I want to know is, well, why are the Venusians interested in us?
Okay. They're interested in us because... as they say, and is reinforced by Mr. Gandhi from the fourth dimension, left...
Gandhi?
Gandhi.
You don't mean Mahatma.
Yeah. You missed that part of the program. Yes.
From Mahatma Gandhi. And Kipling.
It's the same Mahatma?
Same fellow.
And Kipling.
Speaking very beautifully and very convincingly with the normal... vocabulary and voice.
Kipling and Mahatma Gandhi. Those two must be
a
riot.
They speak a book of both the same night.
No, that must be a riot. They're both out there in the fourth dimension.
They all agree that we have stumbled across...
How do they resolve their differences, their historical differences, Kipling and Mahatma Gandhi?
Those things are more or less taken care of, I think, when we go into another dimension, let us say.
They both... You go into another dimension, you forget about India?
Not about India. That man will never forget about India.
Well, I imagine
his work for us are all for India.
Yeah, but I imagine Kipling and Mahatma Gandhi have substantially different opinions about India.
Mr. Kipling isn't teaching. He is in no position...
This is Rudyard,
Right, Rudyard. He is giving unpublished poems, which is his forte, and which he does very well. Gandhi...
I wish he wouldn't, but obviously he's a crummy poet. Is his poetry improved?
I am not a poetry critic. I really can't say. But both have stated that we have stumbled across a natural force of the creative energy of the universe. We're employing it and playing with it, this nuclear fission. Go on into the hydrogen, go into the cobalt, and we are perfectly capable of blowing ourselves off into space as a flaming mass, unless something is done to retard it. They are going to do their best, but man still has freedom of will, and we can nullify their best efforts.
Well, why are they so concerned? Is Venus in danger?
Yes, we are definitely upsetting the entire solar system. They can feel it in their ventlers.
Well, I mean, if they've mastered the power to make ventlers and fly at speeds surpassing human imagination and travel from planet to planet and sweep the space of radioactive fallout, and why don't they just direct a force screen above Venus and let us merrily blow ourselves to pieces? That's what I would do.
That isn't as easily done as
building a ventilator.
As you would imagine, no. I think of it in quite a simple little thing. I think of it as the neighbor. If there's a neighbor in the neighborhood who insists on every day putting his garbage in his driveway, and it is being tracked up and down the neighborhood by the dogs and the children and so forth, the neighborhood has gotten together, all of the planets, and voted that tonight we're going to present the planet Earth with a garbage can and teach them how to use it.
Well, I would move out of the neighborhood.
Well, the neighborhood is well tied together. I think Ellery has something here.
I think there's something being held back here, Bob. I don't know if it is that you don't want to talk, or you're the delegates from the planet Venus don't want to talk. There's something is off here. I hear talk of the planet Venus and the planet Mars, and sometimes the moon. But you did mention that the Venusians have visited the stars.
True.
What's wrong? Why don't we hear from the planet Mercury? Why don't we hear from Saturn and Neptune and the rest?
We have heard from Jupiter, Mars, and I believe Saturn.
I mean, this isn't something that is being held back.
No.
It sounded very suspicious.
No. For example, we'll get a visiting scientist or something from Jupiter that'll discuss things with us. I think there is a quotation I remember from tapes where they said, after all, we are the largest planet and so forth, therefore we have our forces and so forth.
Well, what do you call the citizens of Jupiter?
The Jupiterians.
Uh-huh.
Not Jovians?
No. I'll tell you another thing, of course. They have pointed out that the entire universe is not entirely under the same benevolent force for good. There are forces for evil. Orion, and this seems to tally with some of the books I'm running across, is a force for evil, they say. Some of these ships in the atmosphere are from Orion, yes.
From Orion?
Orion.
Is it the constellation Orion?
Yes, it's very unfriendly.
Well, how do you figure that? The constellation? I'm lost now. The constellation Orion. You're assuming that it's all one family of stars.
Yeah, she said she hasn't used the word. You see, there's another thing that I'm doing with all these tapes that Long John said. I'm trying to trip her on vocabulary. She can't use the word constellation.
Yes.
On this tape, she couldn't find it in her vocabulary. She said the Orion group.
Well, I don't know. I'm thinking of the nebula now, Orion, which is a whole great big mess of stars, and
the stars that go to form up the constellation Orion, some of them are millions of light years distant from each other. There are,
let's put it this way.
Second and third magnitude stars that have no relationship.
If we're talking tonight about San Mateo and Redwood City and so forth, there are some of us that know that that's the San Francisco area. There are others who do not know it, but we can identify it as the San Francisco area.
Yeah, but you wouldn't talk about the San Francisco area. You wouldn't include China in it because China happens to be for.
I didn't include them.
Well, talking about the Orion constellation is the same thing.
No, that's not the point.
You're looking at it from a different viewpoint. Now, don't forget the Venusians continually remind you that your concept of light years is entirely fallacious, and that our thinking in terms of time and space are fallacious also. They remind us that science must start at the bottom and once again climb the tree, and he will accidentally tip over the things that he has missed on the first go-round.
This gets me. What's wrong with our concept of time and space, as pointed out by the Venusians?
Well, we covered that early in the evening, for example, that an ellipse or a parabola and a straight line and so forth will not, according to their way of thinking, take one of our Air Force pilots, providing he has a proper plane, in a straight line out to Venus. It can't be done because space is not a void, they say. It is full of very definitely solid objects, and one must go around them or meet an untimely death.
Yeah, it's full of dust particles and asteroids.
In other words, for the purpose of the discussion, rather than pick the details apart, we must assume certain things, that if we feel that the Venusians are speaking with us and so forth, that they have a closer knowledge by running their spaceships around the universe to these places that they are talking about beyond our knowledge.
They're going to land in force, and then they're going to make overtures?
Yeah, make overtures as they I don't want to use the word move in, as they become known, recognize, and display what they care to
do. In other words, you mean they're going to take over?
Take over, in our vocabulary, has a bad connotation. They're going to show us a better life. There is a quotation, "We offer you our way of life, far better than your own."
They're offering us their way of life by landing in force?
True. Hamamatsu concludes.
Is it forcing it on us?
My friend, if it takes force to quit the devastation that we might achieve by the efforts at Cape Canaveral and employing cobalt bombs in the nose of those things, wouldn't you be in favor of it? Would you vote with us?
By using force? No.
What kind of a force? A positive force for construction?
You said
not a
deep. No, wait. Now look, words are pretty important to me. They're landing in force. That means that large numbers of them.
Large numbers of them in every portion of the world. Yes.
And they're going to take over. You said that also.
I don't like the word take over.
They are going to offer
to us on a platter.
All right, fine.
Their way of life.
And what if we say no? We like the way things are.
I'm afraid you would be outvoted.
Outvoted by who? Let's take
people who want an end of illness.
All right.
Let's take
the supposition.
Nutrition.
Let's take the supposition that everyone on Earth is as thick-headed and stupid as I am, and they say Venusians go home. We like the way things are.
Then you have no basis for such a supposition.
Thank you, Ellen.
What would the Venusians do in a case where they meet with an active resistance from Earth people who want no way of?
They will turn around and retreat. Because they have stated, yes, that they will do their best, but not force anything.
This sounds very different from
that. That's why the schedule, if you can see their point of view for a minute, and to answer Lillian's question as to why it is difficult working with them, their schedule is laid out. They are on schedule. They are proceeding on little cat's feet, very slowly, coming along to do it properly, their way. They will not listen to it our way. In other words, they will not probably accept our invitation if we make it within 5 minutes to address a group in Madison Square Garden, which would please us and would not be their way of doing business.
Right, are they source of object sighted below the waters in the Persian Gulf? And there have been several such reports, one in the China Seas. I'm just thinking there was a theory that the some of these flying saucers came from no other world but from the bottoms of our oceans, and wouldn't it be a perfect decoy device for them to send you messages that they came from Venus and they came from Mars, and in effect they came from this civilization at the bottom of the oceans and were planning to take over, and this was a perfect foil to fool us, to make us look into the skies when they really were coming up out of the ocean?
I think you can reduce what you've just said very simply to the thing that is generally thrown out first when you mention mediumship, is the fact that, do you know whether or not you are doing business with demons and evil sources and so forth? A person who has had mediumship all of their life can test their sources, can test their contacts.
Do you have a directional finder device?
Miss Brady is able to do that, yes.
And does this directional device work, finding device work through multidimensional methods?
Well, yes, because as we said, there's no time, there's no space. There are the fifth, sixth, and seventh dimensions beyond the fifth.
And you can feel pretty certain that these aren't waylaying devices for creatures coming up from the bottoms of the oceans.
Oh, no. That would merely be, something that might fill up an empty space in a magazine.
Well, I feel very reassured after hearing you say this, Bob.
Working with these people day and night for 365 days, I and everyone who has come near them is certainly assured that they have nothing but the very best in mind.
I wanted to ask you one thing. In the instructions and lessons that are being delivered from the Venusians, and I gather from the Martians, and possibly from the Jupiterians.
Jovians.
Well, Jovians, I understand, is not the correct terminology then. I think that we are more or less Jovians around the law of the party line, but in any case, the messages that they transmit, the lessons that they teach, are these lessons in reasoning and thinking in order to understand things, or is this a teaching of how to use intuition? Can you say anything about that at all?
I would say that as you listen to them, they are very basic facts which would escape our ordinary attention. For example, Timothy, not factual in concrete hammer nail sense. But for example, let's take a quick illustration that comes to mind. Simitrali has pointed out in one of her lessons that there is ever constant motion, that down to your fingertips, every portion of you is in continual state of motion. As is, as we know here, these microphones are not sitting on the table. You know all about that. The molecules are rushing around in the microphones. The table has molecules and so forth. So this building is a bunch of molecules sitting on top of the earth and so forth. But Simitrali has pointed out that all life is continual motion. There is no stagnation. No chance, even in this existence or others, to stand still.
Even an absolute zero?
There is no such thing.
No?
Then, going in as Lillian led into color. Color is a very, very fine importance. That makes me think a little. You know, because the spectrum is something that is, after all, basic. And it has its functions back and forth through, I understand, metallurgy, physics, chemistry, and things like that. And you know, what we are discussing here tonight is the fact that perhaps it is possible for Miss Brady. The only thing about mediumship as I would see it is that she can see above the normal spectrum, hear above the audible range. Now, Miss Brady has a trouble, if we can get scientific for a moment. Miss Brady has a problem when, at Sanford, Florida, the Naval Air Station is conducting maneuvers with the fleet in the Atlantic east of Sanford Naval Air Station, because her home in Ormond Beach, Florida, is between them. The frequency of the vibrations used in transmission and so forth keep her awake at night. She can hear them. We discussed this with
Can you hear radio waves?
Yes. We have discussed this with a man.
How can you hear an electromagnetic radio?
So we sit here discussing hi-fi. I have been tested for 13.5. Maybe Long John can still go to 15. You can go to 16 and so forth.
Oh, no, that's very different. How can you hear an electromagnetic radiation? Now,
how can you feel heat and things like that? Does light travel or is light? Those are problems that have
traveled.
Is light?
Well, fellas, if we're going to settle any problems, I'm going to settle one right now. This is WOR Radio. Your station in New York, 710 on the dial.
About the good intentions of the Venusians, and he said before that the Venusians said that they were going to offer us their way of life. And I have always, in my own experience, felt that whenever someone offered me something with very good intentions, I also had the right to refuse it, and they would not feel in any way hurt about it. You seem to think that if something was offered in good faith, it would have to be accepted.
have to be accepted. No, I think that I may be putting myself in someone else's shoes, but that it would be generally accepted because I, for one, if they could stop rock and roll or something, I think I would vote, and I think there'd be quite a few people.
I love rock right. and roll.
Me too. I you attacking rock and roll.
Oh, not only attacking it,
I think it's in many instances one of the most wonderful things that's happened.
Do you mean to say, Bob Ewing, that if the Venusians had control over this planet, that they would decide what they think would be best for us to listen to? In other words, we wouldn't have choice. If you prefer classical music and somebody else wants jazz and somebody else wants rock and roll, and if the Venusians think that rock and roll is not good for us, they are going to make the decision.
Aren't the newspaper headlines full of tie-ups between delinquency and rock and roll?
Well,
hasn't jazz had its bad connotations and so forth?
I don't care for rock and roll myself, but I would like to have somebody prove to me that rock and roll, that there's any connection between rock and roll and juvenile delinquency. I think if you'll remember, back in the late 30s, when Benny Goodman was the big thing in my book, he's still great, but when we had Benny Goodman around and we had these big shows at the Paramount Theater, the kids were dancing in the aisle, and there was a lot of stories around that this music was not good for the youngsters. I'm talking about swing, which today we sit back as older people. I mean, comparatively speaking, we say this is wonderful.
You know, why is it unpopular to stomp out things that the general public likes so well?
Why is it unpopular? Well, I imagine that you feel that rock and roll should be abolished.
Well, it's defended as though it were mother love or something equally
Mom, I don't consider myself a member of the general public at all. I like rock and roll.
Well, there could be no further excuse for these radio stations throughout the country playing it all day long.
Yes, but I like it individually. I discovered it all by myself. It has nothing to do with what everyone else says. And I found out that there was a great current of this thing throughout the
country. Haven't the factories taste the music with the work and so forth? Don't they start out with a certain tempo in the morning and go through the day very scientifically and things like that? Doesn't it upset the normal disturbances that affect your nervous system by just whacking at you all day?
Let me ask you this then, Bob.
You don't have to listen.
Bob, no, wait, no. Bob, here's something. Supposing that you're sitting in your home and you're reading a book. Do you think that you could sit and listen to swing music?
No, I know I couldn't.
All right. And you couldn't listen to rock and roll?
Okay.
So would you abolish swing and rock and roll because you can't read a book in the same time and listen to
it? I think we're putting it on a quite a different plane. I mean, we're getting down to where we're defending something in a peculiar fashion. In other words, let me ask you again, aren't our mental institutions full
of rock and rollers?
Full, period. Without mentioning with whom. I mean, you're subjecting you're subjecting a physical body.
Who's a mental institution? Rock and rollers?
Psychologists.
Are people who haven't been able to stand the face of life. The exigencies of normal living and so forth have been too much for them.
You know, how did we get to the mental institution all of a sudden? We're talking about a guy spinning a couple of rock and roll records and we wind up in the mental institution.
I'm not
far from this panel.
Are you going back this morning, Bob?
Yes, I think so. After about noon or so.
You put your back in the jacket, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Look, you know,
the man's outside now, Jack.
You know, he's waiting for me. That's why.
Oh, I thought that was my man.
You know, we have Muzak in our
office. We have Muzak.
Muzak. Yeah. Whatever that's
called. Yeah, what about it?
In our office. And, you know, most of the time it's very, very soothing and all the rest of it. But at certain times, I don't want to hear it. I get up and I turn it off. I mean, these rhythms don't upset me if they upset me.
His vibration so pounded
for you all day.
Gentlemen, I represent Florida, and I fully sit here anticipating the moving of the entire, at least 80% of the North down there eventually to avoid some of the things.
I have the WOR weather balloon in my hand for the temperature in Midtown Manhattan. Pardon me, 56 degrees. Humidity, 44. No kidding. Our good man, Ted White, I think that's a very clever bit. He brought in a balloon, and he's got it marked the WOR weather balloon. It's a clever, funny bit, don't you think? Very good. Wonder where Ted White stole the idea.
Well, isn't that the balloon they use regularly to get the weather reports done?
No. We open the window. We have a high-powered telescope, and we check the thermometer, the Pepsi-Cola thermometer in front of the Liga drugstore. And that's the way we check it. There we go. Yes.
Getting away from rock and roll.
We haven't even been with it yet, Dad, but go ahead.
And mental institutions. And various other things.
You know, you said something before that intrigued me. You said, like all these things that we've been flipping over, that, I mean, you're throwing so much at us, I can't quite assimilate it. But one thing stuck out in my mind. You said something more about the Venusians have knowledge or operate in sixth and seventh dimensional spaces.
I didn't say that. I said those dimensions existed.
Those dimensions existed. Well, this is very fabulous and interesting to me, because for the past few days, I've been doing some work on n-dimensional vector spaces, and up until the present moment, I always thought that, say, fifth and sixth and seventh dimensional spaces were mathematical abstractions of a great deal of beauty and rigor and value. I never knew they actually existed.
We're sitting in two different schools, aren't we?
I would say two different worlds. I mean, could you describe what a fifth dimensional space is to me? I mean, I could describe to you what an n-dimensional vector space is.
What you are talking about is, all I can do...
No, which I learned in the last 3 days.
It's to be the guy that runs the tape recorder to record what the Venusians are telling me. Don't forget, my personality has nothing to do with it.
This is my personality. If someone said fifth-dimensional space to me, I would immediately... My eyes would light up, and I would say, these things exist, and they would say yes, and I would say, of what degree equation forms this space, or what are the coordinates of this space?
Well, why couldn't we ask the Venusians?
I said I would ask the Venusians.
Yes, Ben, I would like you to make the motion here that Long John put on the Venusians some evening. Let them talk to the panel. And you people ask them, you see. That's why I might
would
be
they
here
be willing
to introduce. Oh, I have been sitting here for about a half hour, somehow feeling that they would.
Yes,
as a matter of fact,
how would
we
they
arranged
do it
in October? There, I'm quite sure it would have taken place.
How would they do it?
Miss Brady would simply sit here in the chair.
Well, you just said you've been sitting here for half hour. Are you getting a message now?
No, because that's another thing. I certainly. I have given everyone to understand that I am not in the least sensitive, but somehow I have felt in the last half hour that I would like to prevail upon Long John to put them on directly to a tune of about an hour and a half. I think that's the longest I've heard them speak yet.
You mean to have Miss Brady here in person?
Yes, here
let
in person.
Let her go into a trance.
Let her go into the trance, and you simply fight this out with Timothy and Hamamatsu and whoever, whatever.
I can't even say it, not alone.
I would love to speak to Timothy. She intrigues me.
She is the most gracious personality.
Does she wash her sweaters in real life? Will you check next time?
I've been told that she wears... clothing, mostly in purples and so forth, and gold, and it's not the consistency of a sweater, let me say.
I'd like to ask you, Bob, since you are so much against, what is considered to be popular music, what type of music do the Venusians play?
They have not described the type, but they have plenty of music. As a matter of fact, Hamble described the little musical instrument that he played, not very well, as he admitted. That he blows through.
Yes.
And when asked, he described that, yes.
A wind instrument.
A wind instrument.
Like a recorder?
Yes, I would assume something too.
Would that be like any of our music that we have, let's say, in the classical repertoire or any?
I would say so, yes.
Of any particular century or?
I don't know. I like the recording the music of the planets that Gustav Flaubert, I think, wrote it. But I play it occasionally, thinking that perhaps it may have some kind of a connection. I don't know.
You have some Flaubert?
You never know, because whether or not he might have been impressed. Because the Venusians speak continually of impressing people to bring various things to happen.
But you could not describe the music to us in terms of any of
no,
one of the classical styles.
No, I have no information on that subject whatsoever. Mm-hmm. But my point was merely that the human organism, mental and physical, we would be very guilty of sitting here and condoning a whole bunch of things that were it was being subjected to, one right after the other, rock and roll being one. Okay.
Well, no, that's ridiculous. That is merely a personal preference, really, now. When it comes down to music or the arts, finally, it is a personal preference. And there's neither good or evil involved in it.
And has Venusian ever said anything about rock?
No, they haven't. They've spoken about nutrition, the way we eat. Mm. They don't like the kind of way we eat. No.
What are their views on
the
music? Do the Venusians have any opinions on sheath dresses and chemises?
No, I'm afraid we won't get into that. The conversation is quite serious.
And this is very serious, too. This is WOR Radio, your station in New York, and this is Long John with the Party. I don't know what happened in here tonight. I'm coughing and choking up. What do we have? The air conditioning blasting?
Those are the rays.
Mother Tinklepaw. Mm. What do we have? Four, I'm telling you.
There's a telegram here, John.
Oh, great. Lucky for you.
Oh,
here. I have one, too.
Well, this is what you were talking about.
Oh.
Something that was happening. This is from Sally Chaos, or Chaos, I'm sorry. Gene is right.
Great author.
Gene is right. WOR was flooded with outer space sounds similar to your entrance and exit music. What about religion on Venus? Do they believe that Earth does all kinds of religions?
Hello, what's happening?
Well, I'll read this other
telegram. We'll have to get Rodney Dexter to fill in tomorrow night. Here's one more from Souders or Souders, W-A Souders, S-O-U-D-E-R-S. Your transmission interrupted three times. Stations on either side transmitting. This is from Kew Gardens. Well, we've had a number of complaints this morning. People claim that from time to time the signal could not be heard. I don't know what it is. And this. I don't think it has anything to do with satellite 2 or 5, although we've been told. What is it, number 2 hovering over New York?
Yes, that's in charge of the New York area. 4 is down around Washington. We haven't gotten into that.
Yeah. Lots of 4 being Washington. You want to read this one, Mr. Isker?
Yeah, this is from the same gentleman before with that telegram that took so long to get here, and this one was sent from Philadelphia, and it was sent at 3:08 and got here at 4 o'clock. And this is the Long John Station, WOR. East is east and west is west, and Venus and Earth shan't meet. If Ewing would come in out of the sun and protect his head from the heat. But there be neither UFOs, ventures, nor saucers flying, duped by the Venusians yet to cruise as far as Orion. Signed, Amos Kipling, Reinhardt, in astral bodies, silly.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. Here's one from Pennington, New Jersey. Radio went dead, too. Ellison Ballard. What do you mean, radio went dead, too? What else is dead? All right. Last call for telegrams. We'll take about 5 more minutes, and then we'll have to wrap up the teletype department. You can pick up your phone in any community where you may be at the present time and be sure and tell your operator, your Western Union operator, that we're going to close our teletype in about 15 minutes. And if she doesn't guarantee to get the telegram in our studio within 15 minutes to get the whole deal. Do you have another telegram?
Yes, this one is from Margaret F. Brother Ewing, greetings. Careful ears, listen. Don't talk modes of travel. Courage appreciated. You'll have explanations. Thanks and courage. Margaret F. P. F. Illuminati.
Did you know who it is?
No, I do.
You don't know the lady?
She's the one who talked with Tesla.
You've never met her?
Tesla has been talking with her during the last year or so.
I may know her.
Yeah, you do know her. Well, I think that's about... We got a couple of more telegrams coming in. We're talking with Bob Ewing this morning. The goodwill ambassador from Venus. And Ben Iskwit, who we've been told, or we shouldn't announce it tonight, we possibly will tomorrow night, but Ben will be representing the planet Venus in the New York area after tonight.
No, Pluto. I talk more with my personality.
Let's see. Who else is around? Ellery and Lillian Lanier. Bob the Mantler. What's happening out there, Bob? Any action? You're waiting to hear from Philadelphia, all right?
Well, they take long to come in.
Yeah. Hey, move up, Bob. Come on, Bob. Get close to that mic. There you go. No.
What happened?
It's some of the Venusian double.
Run it out
in there.
You hear me? You flipped it now. Do the Venusians have any opinions about poltergeists?
No, Venusians haven't. It's not on their beat. But Miss Brady has quite a bit of information. She had an experience of one.
We'd like to hear about it.
Poltergeists are generally thought to be earthbound spirits who have a tremendous power to achieve what they want to do. They want, for example, for some reason of their own, to upset some person. For example, Miss Brady has a story of having been in Chesterfield, Indiana some years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And
they were all the spiritualists meet.
That is one of the places. And there are the two little males, one in New York State, one in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And
you have one of Florida?
Oh, yes.
What's it
in? It's Casadega, Florida, in Casadega, New York.
Yeah.
Lilydale and Lilydale.
Mm-hmm.
It's just outside of old Daytona Beach by about 40 miles, and Miss Brady speaks there quite often.
So that not having accommodations where most everyone was put up at Chesterfield, Indiana, there was a cottage available, and at the last minute, while arriving on the scene, Miss Brady was given that in lieu of some other place where she could spend the night. So as she tells me the story, in the middle of the evening, in the middle of the night, she was woken out of a sound sleep, and the usual business of the chiffonier, the drawers popping out, things flying around, everything coming out of a bag, and she straightened up, looked across the room, and she saw the manifestation of this poltergeist, the spirit, and she affixed him with a good glare, and, "What are you about, little man?" And she spoke with him psychically and asked just what he was about. And he went off having a chance to put his story across and so forth. He went into a story. It has something, I can't remember it exactly, but it was roughly something to the effect that he had owned the farm where this was now situated, and he had given the property, I think, to his son to build the farm, work the farm for the rest of his days, raise his children on it, and so forth. The son probably left for the city, disappointed the father, sold the farm, and now here was this Camp Chesterfield, and somebody else was in that house that was to be kept for the family and so forth. So he was quite upset.
And through the years, he had made it a business to make anyone very uncomfortable who would occupy the place. So Miss Brady talked it out with him, and she explained to him that he was using a very negative force, which wasn't the thing to do, that he had a lot of studying to do, a lot to learn, and that he should ascend a little bit and get off this earthbound level that he was on and go about his business. Miss Brady, of course, having a very forceful and positive attitude about the whole thing, and she sent him packing. The next morning, there were people, of course, that knew that this phenomenon had gone on for a number of years. And she told the story, finally, when they said, "Were you disturbed during the evening?" And as far as she knows, to this day, there wasn't really anything.
You know, Bob, having lived in Europe for a while and having been brought up in the climate of Poltergeist, where the term originates, we always thought of them as something that was rather fun than anything that was negative. In fact, all the Poltergeists that I ever heard about were fun to be with. We never had any trouble with them.
They're mischievous.
In fact, we used to welcome them.
That's where we get that old expression, "more fun than a barrel of Poltergeist."
Well, popping corks out of bottles, throwing your things out of your luggage, it isn't damaging or anything, but it's a nuisance for us.
Well, I think the attitude of most people about Poltergeist perhaps is negative. I don't think the Poltergeist is negative at all, because if you approach the Poltergeist in the spirit of fun, you will find out that he is not very damaging at all.
But you see, that's only one manifestation. It is generally thought among mediums that obsessive drinking, the compulsion to drink, dipsomania, and so forth, and allied things, are the enforcement of a stronger will upon a weaker personality who is still in the earth body. That there is a force that has passed, who was deeply involved, let us say, in compulsive drinking, and he takes the attitude in our slang, the monkey on the back.
You mean a poltergeist is someone who might have been involved in drinking?
No, I'm saying there's a relationship of earthbound spirits taking various manifestations. The mischievous poltergeist on one hand, the person causing compulsive drinking on the other, ruining a man's life, losing his job.
But poltergeists are not necessarily mischievous.
Ben?
Well, what kind of kick does the spirit get when the spirits come into the earth body? I mean, this spirit is living
on... driving another man. He's exerting his will on yours.
But he's doing it because he's a former alcoholic.
Look at the case of the three faces of Eve.
Give that four faces of Eve.
All right, fourth one just came.
Yeah.
Think that one through. It is explainable in this form. Where else did all the personalities come from, so forth? You will have to investigate this possibility and the incarnation.
No. Wait. One thing at a time. I'm very slow tonight. Look, if man is driven to excessive drinking because a former alcoholic spirit has inhabited his earth body,
yeah, with a very
what kind of kick does a spirit get out of drinking a good, hard, 100-proof bourbon? This is a spirit.
The spirit derives the satisfaction.
And notice how I'm avoiding the pun on the word spirit with great...
The
passage into another dimension isn't always known. Most mediums can cite cases during the Second World War of boys who came to mediums all over the world who suddenly came into circles and who penetrated a group sitting in a seance and so forth, just coming in saying, "Where am I? I was standing there, I was lighting a cigarette with Joe, and I can't find Joe. I can't find anybody. I'm the such and such field artillery battalion such and such. I have a case of a boy who came to me, quoted his whole army serial number, his regiment, his division, and so forth, and told exactly where he was killed in France and so forth. And I have taken that up with the military."
And what happens when you take it up? What do they do?
Get in streets.
Well, I've always said that work is the curse that we've been thinking.
Well, so you have this passage where the spirit isn't aware of what he is.
You really believe this?
I have talked to enough people, John. I've traveled a very great deal.
Alive or dead?
Both. And it's one of those things
I
can't disprove.
I don't mean what your condition was at the time. I mean the people that you were interviewing.
I can't disprove my work, and I would like to invite any panel member or yourself or anyone listening
to come with me in research on this. That's all we want. We want it from colleges, and we've been wanting it from the government.
Look, Bob, let's get back for a moment to the... You're representing the planet Venus. Have you presented your credentials at the United Nations?
That would be an interesting thing, wouldn't it?
No,
good afternoon down there.
How come? Reason can you have for not...
Very good reason. I don't come to New York too often, and this city and Washington are not pleasurable to
bring up an esoteric
thing like I have.
You don't mean that in a sense, do you?
No, I'm saying that presentations are not received as they are in other quarters, and just the economics alone of piling up hotel bills and trying to see the right man at the United Nations.
Do you know that James Avery Joyce, who's an international barrister, you were on the program,
yeah, very fabulous.
He has written a couple of... He was the guest editor for the Saturday Review of Literature on two or three weeks. He has discussed the possibility of space travel, and he is at the United Nations, and we've had Ben Cohn on the program as well, and they're all interested in space travel.
When did you have him?
You had Ben Cohn?
Oh, sure. Ben Cohn was on a Saturday night with Major Markoff and Mel Coloni, and I think it's this year.
Oh, well, we had a very interesting talk with him.
No, he was on the... I'm pretty sure it was this year or the latter part of last year. The reason I mentioned these two names, it would seem to me that if these gentlemen are so interested in space travel, the possibility of going to the moon and to other planets, don't you think they would honestly be interested in your credentials if you could produce them, that you're representing Venus, and that they would work with you?
A little bit backward about taking such a step. They might contact us secretly as your no-name telegrams do. But I am not...
Well, we don't have any no-name telegrams. In other words, the names. We have the names.
Why aren't the names revealed?
Well, a lot of people don't desire to have their name mentioned.
Well, Major King will do the same thing in NICAP. You can send the 750, and we won't use your name if you don't want it listed as a member. Concealing things?
Oh, that's not concealing anything.
If a person has genuine belief, why shouldn't they lay the cards on the table?
No, I don't think so.
How many books on the subject of flying saucers tell you on the first page what the contactee is doing and how he is doing it? Can you name one?
No, but I have a telegram here from Fort Lee, New Jersey. And they've requested me not to use their name. Here's the message. Ben is a very clever man. Signed, Mrs. Benjamin Iskowitz. Oh, I should have mentioned her name.
I have no relatives in Fort Lee.
I beg your pardon?
I have no relatives in Fort Lee. I'm also happy
to... John, I think this flying saucer mystery will be solved when people lay the cards on the table and we proceed to bring the thing out in the open and go ahead. As a matter of fact, sometimes I think the Gray Barker story about the men in black may have a logical conclusion that he became, as Lillian has led into a few times, somewhat disgusted working with the space people, because they have given us to understand that they... I think there is a quotation by a fellow named High Lee that went back home to Venus. He used to be on Satellite 5, and he was in charge of flight operations. And he, one night on tape, he said, "I have been a very patient man for 4 years. I've been trying to start this unit." And you know the history of Miss Brady. 4 years prior to my coming with her, she had this whole thing.
What was his name?
Hai Li.
Yeah, what if he's related to Wan Lung Lee, who did my laundry?
I would like to ask, before Miss Brady and yourself, who transmitted the messages that the Venusians were trying to get to Earth? Apparently, they have been trying to reach us for a long time.
Oh, yes, they have. They've been completely disappointed with the people who get to a certain point, are afraid of the glare of publicity, the scorn, and they have businesses. In a certain city in this country, and I've discussed this with Long John, there was a group of people connected with airlines
lawyers, merchants, doctors, and they sat with Miss Brady each Friday night after flying her there, giving her the airline ticket. They sat there with their tape recorders. And then, as they progressed, they actually had, Miss Brady, don't forget, can do this in France, a board here with the blueprint and so forth, and her muscles can be moved, and she drew the whole vessel with the whole propulsion system and so forth.
How do you spell that?
V-E-N-T-L-A. Not the up-to-date thing. They've had 6 prototypes just since I've been working with them, and they're always talking about the new model. But a one that would have flown, yes. Now, these people, when the Venusians put it to them, as they did to us, you've heard what we're doing, go out and bring it into the fore so that this program of ours develops. Each person turned to himself and he said, I'm a doctor, a lawyer, a merchant, whatever he was. I can't do it. By mutual consent, the tape recordings were either destroyed or the most important ones put in a file. The thing was disbanded. There has been no publicity released, and you can't get any of them to talk. They dropped it.
Ben? Well, I don't know. It's been pretty good for sign papers, but... look, I don't know what all this hocus-pocus and hodgepodge about. Why do they have to have meetings? I mean, if someone... I would believe in Venusians. The minute a flight of them went over Washington and they came on the radar.
That's exactly what Mr. Tino told me, as I said it, is this.
That's happened.
How can he believe?
The same.
Let's take it slow. I'm not talking about saucer sightings. I'm talking about Venusians. It's a new way of life and all the rest of them. Now, if a bunch of them staged a rally in Central Park or something.
You see what I told you a half hour ago, that they won't accede to the way you want it done. They're going to do it their way. That's what makes them hard to get along with.
Well, heck with them. What do they want?
Careful what you say, Ben. Careful.
They have this great new glorious mode of life, and the heavens are going to open up to us when they reveal their secrets.
They tell us.
But they're going to go around it like dog alley?
Ellery has been mentioning the 10 satellites orbiting the Earth and so forth. Aren't there a great many stories in flying saucer repertoires that say that some of our largest observatories have spotted objects that they can't account for? There's rumors to that.
No, I'm not talking about UFOs, and I'm not talking about flying saucer reports. I'm talking about Venusians with this heaven on Venus, I guess. I was going to say heaven on Earth for a minute. Or this heaven on Earth that they're going to bring to us. Why don't a body of Venusians come down?
That's what I don't understand. I'm working
on
the same problem you are, my friend. We're all in the same boat.
And you don't understand.
And I'm working with
it. Ben, that's what the Indians thought when Columbus sailed away after his first touching of the shores of the Americas.
But could they simply
you
go?
Wait. What
you
would
Columbus?
What did Columbus say?
Columbus Circle. That's in New York.
Let me
remind you people that the general tire and rubber dealer in your community has a wonderful offer for you. And you can find the one that's located nearest to your home by checking the red book, the yellow pages. And when you find that name and address, you hustle over there. Because a dollar will get you extra thousands of miles when you're driving. Those tires there, they're so fabulous, the general tires that... you should have them on your car. They are the best. We're going to be talking tonight at midnight with a group of people about ESP, and we're going to conduct a couple of tests. It's going to be quite the thing, I understand. Great. And, of course, Saturday night we'll be talking about the Beat Generation. And...
who are we talking with ESP about?
Who are we going to be talking with ESP about?
Who's on the ESP?
Jack Bell. No relation to Dave Bell. And actually, this happens to be a motion picture album. They produced a number of films, and they're working on some ESP films. And I understand there'll be something very, very... pardon me. It'll be something out of the ordinary, and you better tell your friends and neighbors about it.
Yes, sir, Bob. We've only a couple of minutes left. I want to say to Ben, I played a tape the other day, totally by accident. With so many tapes, I don't know the contents of each. But what am I to do? Here's a perplexing situation. I had representatives of the Miami Daily News, the DeLand Sun, the Daytona Beach Morning Journal, television station WESH, WMFJ, Daytona Beach, all of them convened at a table like this, sitting there. There must have been maybe 15 people. They were speaking with Cimitrolli. They were taking their notes. They were asking their questions. Cimitrolli outlined the complete November program to them. This was August. A girl from the television station said, could you project yourself in this trance thing in front of a television camera? Cimitrolli told her very plainly, why not wait until mid-November when we will be inside and everything will be fine, and then it will make a much better program. Those people wrote tongue-in-the-cheek articles. Every one of them, I have a copy of each one of them, describing her voice, saying how ridiculously phony it all was. November 10th.
Well, Bob, did it ever occur to you that when someone hears the voice of an alleged Venusian through a trance medium, there might be a certain amount of lack of belief attached to it? I mean, there might be considerably more belief attached to a substantial Venusian who just, you know, sits down in front of you and starts talking to you?
As far as the Venusian is concerned, that's what they are doing.
That's what they are doing.
They can...
There are... No. There's a difference between someone who is actually a Venusian and can prove he's a Venusian, and he says, there is my Ventla, this is how I came, and this is how we live in Venus, I am so-and-so, and all the rest of it, and hearing a voice through a trance medium. I mean, now look, there's one fact we have to face. There are a certain number of people in this world who don't believe in trance mediums.
Well, won't they take the time?
And there are a certain number of trance mediums who... There are a certain number of trance mediums who are not, shall we say, authentic. I mean, trance mediums is... To me, not the most direct way of proving someone's existence.
But merely because I know nothing about cowboys and people that watch westerns all day long know a whole great deal about it. They have learned their subject. I don't know their subject.
You know, that's not an error in logic on your part. That's a semantic trick, and you know it.
It is not. I've devoted a year to trying to disprove this thing and got so wound up in it.
To disprove cowboys?
You bring in cowboys. Now look, I am.
They have
I have the greatest respect for you. That is not an error on logic in your part. That's a semantic trick and it's not worthy.
It's merely spending their time the way I've spent mine in two different directions.
Well, look, I can say Benjamin,
watch out, the cowboys are coming. We're going to wrap it up. I think we'll fold up the tent, send the squads back to the reservation. The cowboys will be coming in just a moment. The first cowboy we'll be listening to is Harry Carlson. He'll be coming in on horseback. And at 6 a.m., John B. Gambling. We've been talking this morning with Bob Ewing, E-W-I-N-G. If you care to contact Bob, you're more than welcome to do so by sending a card or a letter to Bob Ewing, E-W-I-N-G, care of Long John Station, W-O-R, New York 18. Ellery and Lillian Lanier have been with us, Ben Iskowitz. We've also had, as our engineers, Russell Tinklepaw and Al Nielsen. Sam Vanderbilt, the photographer, has been around here for a while. Bob Mantler. And let me see. Who else? That's about it, right?
We had communications officer of Satellite Show. What was his name?
Hurrah. Yeah, Hurrah. He was here, too. Neighbors, that wraps it up. I've had it. A very, very happy Memorial Day to you, and I hope you'll be back with us again tonight at midnight. If you're getting up now, I hope you have a very, very happy day. If you're going to get out on the highway, take it easy. Please do. And if you're going to bed now, get a good night's sleep. It's real good. Bless you.